and gentlemen, this is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon. And it feels like we're back. We're back. It's been a crazy couple of weeks, folks, here at the Alex Jones Network. I was on vacation for a week, then Alex was on vacation for a week, so I was filling in for Alex. Of course, Rex Jones filling all of the holes in the schedule. And then, of course, the tail end of last week, I was out Thursday and Friday because I was doing a couple of big debates with Brandon Straka of the Walk Away Movement. And it was absolutely a blast. It was very fun, very entertaining. I'm very excited for our debate to come out. I'm even more excited for the other debates to come out, arguing things like America First versus MAGA or just conspiracy theories in general. The conspiracy theory debate was not the most intellectually rigorous, let's just say. It was more fun, and it'll be a great debate, and it'll be very fun, and it's very entertaining and very fun to be a part of. But I had done so much research and note-taking before the debate, I'm going to have to put it to use. So maybe later this week, we're going to do a full-fledged, like, you know, what is a conspiracy breakdown? Because the more you think about it, the more absurd everything gets. Like, just for a quick example, Russiagate. They call Russiagate a conspiracy, but what are they talking about? Because the original claim was a conspiracy theory about Trump conspiring with the Russians. But of course, that was made up by his opposition. So now the conspiracy theory is that there was a conspiracy to create a fake conspiracy to blame on Trump so you could spy on him. And it's just like, it's like Jacob's ladder or something. You know, you can't get a grip. You can't get a hold of anything. However, you know, diving down that rabbit hole and just trying to quantify or identify or figure out a good definition for the word conspiracy theory, the phrase conspiracy theory, is very interesting. So excited to talk a little later about that. America First versus MAGA, of course, got a little bit more heated, a little bit more contentious. I was on team with some very good debaters, including Viva Fry and Chase Geyser and Alex Stein. So we won. So, you know, suffice it to say, I'm pretty sure we won the debate, but we'll wait till it comes out. It was very fun, but definitely a big thanks to Brandon Straka for bringing us all together. You know, when I first joined InfoWars 2017 through like 2020 or so, really before we got hit with the, not just the trials themselves, but the decisions of the trials, the bankruptcy that we were forced into because of the show trials, all that stuff, we had to stop traveling as much. It used to be that we traveled all the time. I was looking back at my calendar from like 2018, and it was like every month I was going to New York or DC covering events here, events there. And I miss that. And I feel like our movement is missing that. I feel like a lot of the, you know, the AF versus MAGA, the divide here is really only possible because we're all online all the time. We don't see each other face to face. We're not taking Ubers together like we did this weekend where we're all just like dying, laughing, cracking up, you know, enjoying each other's company instead of sniping at each other over little details about whatever political drama happens to be dominating the conversation that day. So just getting together. But normally when we would travel before, it would be a big event. It would be CPAC or it would be a TPUSA event, and it'd be a big convention floor and fans and people coming in. It was always be chaotic. In this case, because the debates were just pre-recorded and done in a studio without an audience, what it meant was just for hours at a time, we were just sitting around chatting with all these, you know, influencers, personalities, whatever. Political actors. Actors might not be the best word. Political people involved in the political realm. And it was really such a white pill. It was such a boost for me that you don't get anywhere else. So big thanks to Brandon Straka and the Walk Away Movement for putting the whole thing together and really providing a really unique opportunity for people on the right wing, the dissident right, and the more establishment right coming together. A lot of phone numbers were exchanged. A lot of connections were made. I'm sure we'll all be going on each other's shows now in the future. So really a very valuable thing. And of course, the biggest thank you and the biggest congratulations to Rex Jones, who totally held down the fort, has been absolutely killing it, has hit the ground running with his new career, which isn't even that new because he's been doing it since before I even joined. But he absolutely killed it and did incredible stuff. And I look forward to seeing him a lot more on the network in the future. But a big thanks to Rex Jones for being there so that we can go out and do these important things. We'll be back on the other side with the headlines and the Hunter Biden interview. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but minbenzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search minbenzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon. Very glad you're here with us as we settle back in. Sort of calmer waters. Feels like it's been totally crazy the last 2 weeks. Here at Alex Jones Network, of course, have been so happy to see Rex Jones hit the ground running, being able to take over not just this show, but his dad's show, which by the way, is not an easy thing to do. It's hard to find, you know, adults that have done this for years to carry on in Alex's case, a 4-hour show daily about these big topics, about these ultra controversial topics under the microscope of the leftist media, looking for anything you've said wrong. And how old is Rex Jones? He's like 25, maybe. I think he's 23. I think he's even less than that. It's totally incredible. Really spectacular watching him. Like a duck to water. Confirmed 23 years old. Of course, because I joined InfoWars in 2017. And I remember at the time he was like 14 or 15. And still we'd go out to lunch with the crew and it'd be a bunch of 35-year-old, 40-year-old guys sitting around. And Rex Jones, the 15-year-old, is like holding court and like directing the conversation. I was like, this kid's going places as if he had any option with Alex Jones, your father. But again, it's been a crazy 2 weeks. So thank you to Rex Jones for holding down the fort and doing such an incredible job. Remember to follow him at Rex Jones News with a Z. And of course, the craziest thing is he's doing these shows. He's doing these 3-4-hour shows daily and he's still putting on his own content. Anyway, cannot thank him enough and it's really been incredible seeing him rise to the occasion. So expect to see a lot more of him. And of course, a big thanks to Brandon Straka for getting everybody together for the big debates this weekend that we did and are going to be truly spectacular. And that's all I'll say about that. But we're back. We're hitting the ground running. We've got gigantic doesn't do it justice, enormous. I mean, we're in the realm where we need a new vocabulary word to describe just how big this show is. Considering the fact that I think I sent in over 80 videos today and probably over 100 articles. We got a lot to cover. It's been a crazy weekend. We've got developments in the Iran war. We've got the DSA simultaneously taking over and collapsing in on itself. Very interesting stuff. AOC freezing her eggs. We'll talk about that. We get around to it. So many different variables to take in all of this. Of course, big leaders of the DSA being exposed now with videos talking about how they, you know, want to destroy white people, but know they need to use white people's empathy to get into office. It's sort of similar to how we've been treating Anthony Fauci in the sense that none of this is new, but it is nice to see the perpetrators admit it. And there's that too. There's more Fauci news having to do with the likelihood of miscarriages as a result of taking the vaccine. That has just broken. We'll get to that in just a second. But I want to start today with clips from Hunter Biden and Tucker Carlson's conversation. Hunter Biden has been making appearances on conservative media recently. And I got to admit, off the bat, I don't get this. I don't like this. I think a lot of people are falling for something here. Do we not remember who Hunter Biden is? Like, we'll play some clips, and a lot of them have to do with things like the Hunter Biden laptop, and there's a lot of questions about how the information from the laptop, quote-unquote, was acquired. To me, what was important was the content of the laptop, showing the depravity of Joe Biden's son, reflecting on Joe Biden himself, but also on the ability of politically connected people to get away with their crimes, the very bizarre perversion at work there, the seemingly explicit calls to hire hookers and other such things. Or did we forget all of this happened? Did we forget that he spit paint on a canvas and sold it for $500,000 while his father was president? Now I sort of get the impulse. I sort of understand people who, but this always happens. People who sort of have like had their illusions shattered about Trump, and you know what Trump is doing now with his sons really dwarfs any sort of speculation or even confirmed corruption from Biden and his family. So I sort of understand the impulse once you've had the illusion shattered to go looking for the truth and sort of taking the opposite view that maybe you took beforehand. I understand the impulse. It doesn't mean I agree with it. It doesn't mean it's a healthy or right thing to do. And it's not. It's certainly not. I don't understand why people are helping Hunter Biden rehabilitate his image, what the purpose of this is, what the point of it is, and why it's so easy for leftists. And you'll see it. We'll see when we look at videos from AOC and all this other stuff. They have the memory of a goldfish, and they expect you to also. And they will ruin your life. They will destroy you. They will hyperventilate about something you said and get you fired. And then like a month later, they'll turn around and go, that never happened. We never did that. You're crazy. You're a crazy liar for even saying that we did. Totally nuts. But that's sort of the Hunter Biden vibe I'm getting right now. Again, why are we trying to rehabilitate the crackhead, incestuous, corrupt scumbag son of the worst president of all time? I don't know. I'm not sure what the thinking is here. But is it really this easy? But the question I want to keep asking is like, is it really this easy? Is it really this easy to be the most humiliated, like deranged, psychotic loser in America? And then you can just be like, but I don't like Israel. And people are like, he's a good guy, actually. Actually, he's a great guy and he might be a genius and maybe he should be president. Is it really that easy? Because it does seem to be. And again, I can't help but connect this to the other videos we'll be showing you later. Mamdani, Al-Fayed, or whatever that guy's name is, AOC, who in their private lives are just the most hateful, vicious, despicable people you can possibly imagine. But then they're just like, hey, we just want things to be affordable, right? And people go, vote for him. He's amazing. Please, for the love of God, can we stop falling for the pablum? Can we stop falling for the talking points? Can we stop falling for the obviously, you know, like orchestrated, organized, lab-tested phrases that are meant to invoke a response in you? Can we understand the manipulation going on here so we don't fall for it? I certainly hope so. So we'll show you some videos here. We'll try to talk about what's actually happening underneath the surface. But this interview just broke. Tucker Carlson interviewed Hunter Biden. The story is at alexjoneslive.com. AlexJonesLive.com. Hunter Biden joins Tucker Carlson for a wide-ranging interview. Former first son Hunter Biden joined journalist Tucker Carlson for a two-hour interview this week. They spent the day in Maine with Tucker, says, we had a great conversation. The mere fact that we sat down with each other and had a civil conversation has apparently really pissed certain people off. I'm once again happy to be of service. It's out tomorrow. Enjoy. Again, as if, well, whatever. All right, well, we'll get into it. I once again understand, and in a way, I can appreciate what Tucker Carlson's doing here. I suspect that there's some political ambitions in the future and that the viability of a third party is only possible if you can get the left to come along with you. And we've talked about this a lot before when there were rumors about Tucker wanting to create a third party, or the image from last week of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Joe Kent and Tucker, and, you know, change is coming, and Tucker puts out this, you know, 10-point manifesto, essentially, political manifesto that I totally agree with. I'm in favor of a third party. And like we said, this might be a totally unique opportunity in American politics to create a third party. And people are very much stuck in the old paradigm. This was part of the conversation we had. I probably shouldn't give too much away about the AF versus MAGA debate, just because we want it all to be a surprise. But this was certainly part of the conversation. And again, I feel like people are stuck in the old mindset of like the Libertarian Party, where, okay, the only people who are going to vote for the Libertarian Party are dissatisfied Republicans. So the Republican Party is the only party you're actually drawing votes from, and it's the only party you're hurting. So even if you don't agree totally with the Republicans, they certainly are on your side more so than the Democrats. So it can kind of be a self-defeating proposition. Or you can have the Green Party, and that they're only going to draw votes away from the left. But now we have a unique opportunity where people in both parties are deeply unsatisfied. People in both parties are upset in about the way that the more extreme elements of those parties are being treated. In other words, the DSA and the radical extremist anti-white communists are getting power in the Democratic Party, where the Republican Party has systematically eliminated anybody even slightly to the right of Donald Trump or who disagrees with Trump about Israel, treating their, you know, the outliers of their party very differently. But maybe this is a case to get those more normal, not communist Democrats who also don't want to support Israel's relentless drive to exterminate everybody who's around them to team up with the more radical right-wingers who also are unhappy with the direction of America and unwilling to have the patience and the gullibility to trust the Republicans any longer. So anyway, I understand why he's doing this, but again, I just wanted to lay the groundwork that I don't think we should be giving Hunter Biden a pass at all about anything. But let's look at what he had to say. We'll judge for ourselves. We'll go first to clip A here. Why did Hunter Biden, why is he sitting down with people on the right, including people like Candace Owens? Let's watch.
Thank you for doing this.
Tucker Carlson.
I haven't seen you in 11 years. I've talked about you.
You know.
In the meantime.
And then I wake up one morning and you're doing Candace Owens.
I love Candace.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. I've taken a lot of abuse for saying that, but I do. Yeah. I know her and I do. I think she's a great
person. As a person.
Yeah.
Forget the politics and anything. And largely why I'm sitting here. We've known each other for, you know, quite tangentially for 30 years.
Yes.
Is that she is a human being, is a really, really good person.
Yeah.
And thoughtful and generous and has a deep faith and I just vehemently disagree with some of her positions. And it used to be that way.
I remember.
Remember? I mean, when you and I knew each other, it wasn't as if our politics were much different.
Right.
And anyway, long story a lot longer is
that I'm having that experience with the New York Post at the moment.
By the way, welcome to my world.
Well, I'm not naked, but.
Yeah, hopefully naked pictures don't come out. I could call some of our friends.
Exactly. No one wants to see those.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think so either, but apparently they do. So anyway, long story short and long story longer, I go, and I do this with Sean, and Sean called, and this is public now. I can say it. Is Sean had dinner with Candace. They live in the same neighborhood down there in Nashville. And he said, you know, I really, really like her. And she told my wife that one of the interviews that she most wanted to do was with me, with Hunter Biden. I'm not referring myself in the third person right now. I haven't gotten to that point yet. And, you know, I thought about it and, like you, and we've talked about this a little bit, but like you, Candace has said some really, really awful things, not just about me, but also about my dad, you know, the whole Biden crime family thing, but really, really kind of pointed things. And I believe that if I could sit down with her, not to convince her of anything, but to see that I was just as human as she was and that I own my failings. And I've been incredibly transparent about them. And I thought that if we could find that, you know, commonality, that we could have an actual conversation. And that's what occurred. And I don't agree with Candace still on a lot of stuff. And I almost feel like why do I have to make that, you know, caveat as it relates to it? Because I never used to have to make that caveat. Going all the way back to the beginning of our conversation, how did it change? I truly believe that the level of vitriol, meanness, and cruelty in our politics has always been there, but never like this. Never in a way in which it is practiced with impunity. And that to me has, I think that I can, mark it. Now, it's interesting that you say that your experience is that kind of division started, in 2008, but nothing like this, Tucker.
Okay. But whose fault is that? But I have to wonder, whose fault is it? Who changed the cultural atmosphere of America to where people feel the need to discredit and denounce people just for talking to them? I don't agree with everything he says, but, you know, I do like this. And, well, I'll be friendly and nice with this person. That doesn't mean I endorse it. Who brought that about? Who's at fault? If you're going to, you know, blame a portion of the population, or did it just happen sort of organically and without one side being to blame? I think it's pretty obvious whose side is to blame. And again, I can't help but relate this to what we're going to see later with AOC talking about, oh, we were crazy under woke. That we don't do that anymore. It's like, yes, you do. You absolutely do. In fact, many of those things that were egregious and examples of just, you know, the cultural poison they bring along with them, they've now been enshrined into law. Like, they're now just like the practice officially from corporations and government. This never ended. It never stopped. And they've never apologized for it. They've never actually admitted they were wrong. They just don't want the backlash. They just don't want to be blamed for it. They just want to be able to absolve themselves of everything they did and blame you for bringing it up in the first place. Like, he talks about how nasty Candace Owens was. What did she say? She said, Biden crime family? Well, your family is full of criminals, including you and your father. So I don't think that's particularly nasty. I think that's an accurate representation of reality. So what's nasty? I mean, the things you did were nasty, and reporting on them were inherently nasty because you're a nasty person. You engaged in nasty things. But once again, and I feel like I don't, like, what is it going to take to break out of this paradigm? What is it going to take? Because every single time there is a leftist attack, physically or culturally, the response from the right and the left is, well, both sides need to stop. And how many times on this show have we tried desperately to explain, this is not both sides, this is one side, it's always one side, it's always the left. The right is not doing this. The right does not call for violence. The right does not make up fake stories to destroy their opponents. The right doesn't hold people's feet to the fire for something they said in jest 15 years ago. That's all the left. What the right does will be delivered a hard drive or a laptop that has hundreds of gigabytes of extremely questionable material from the son of the president, and then they'll be censored by big tech in cooperation with the FBI and elements of the deep state American government to stop the story coming out in an attempt to sway the results of an election, almost certainly successfully doing so. Well, where's the equivalent of that on the right? Where's the equivalent of the power on the right to destroy people's lives for telling the truth? Where's the equivalent on, and we wouldn't anyway, right? Obviously, if we had the power, we wouldn't use it. Maybe that's why we don't have the power. This gets a little complicated, doesn't it? We'll go to this next video. We're going to have to break it into two parts, but let's at least begin with clip B here, because they do bring up some interesting elements to the Hunter Biden story that I'm not sure change the laptop, like my interpretation of the contents of the laptop is not going to be changed, and they're not questioning the authenticity of the contents of the laptop, but how it came to public awareness is very interesting. And whether you believe Hunter Biden or not, it does give some insight into the sausage making behind the scenes of how this stuff is determined, whether or not it'll go viral, whether or not it'll make it to the mainstream. So let's watch clip B here, the unanswered questions of the Hunter Biden laptop story.
I have really only one question, one thing that has bothered me for years now.
Yeah.
8 years or whatever, 6 years, whatever it's been. And so I just want to ask you directly about it. So the laptop comes out or doesn't come out. I hear that it's in circulation. I get calls from people in that kind of shadowy way that you're familiar with.
Way before,
with.
Right?
I can't remember.
Anyway, yeah.
So much drama has happened, but you know, if you're in the news business or politics, like you know, people call you, there's this thing, you know, you hear everything all the time and like how much is true, you don't know. I heard about the laptop and then I heard, you know, so you don't know if it's real. And then I heard somebody calls me and goes, you're on the laptop. And because you had written a letter of recommendation for college for my son.
Yeah.
Who didn't end up going to the school or even getting in, but whatever. Yeah. It didn't help, it turns out.
Well, thanks.
But anyway, I knew that it was real because who would know that we knew each other?
Yeah.
Right? No one could fake that. Yeah. And that our wives were friends and all stuff. Yeah. So, but it's Washington. You know everybody there. Yeah. So then I hear this story about how, then the official story comes out about how the laptop was left. You left a couple of laptops in a laptop repair store in Greenville, Delaware, which I'm a town I'm very familiar with. So, and the guy was blind. Then I interviewed the guy who seemed to totally believe the story, John McIsaac. I mean, he seemed to be telling the truth, but the story did not make sense. Meanwhile, we get approached by Israelis connected to Benjamin Netanyahu. Like I know that.
Yeah.
Who are shopping this stuff to me at Fox News.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think that part of the story, the laptop is real. I thought that from day one, but the way that it entered the bloodstream
exactly.
of the American media was not real. So I just want to ask you point blank, did you drop off laptops?
No. And this is the thing that I've said over and over again. I have literally zero recollection or memory of ever dropping off a laptop at John Paul McIsaac's. No, the answer is no. And John Paul
McIsaac.
So John Paul McIsaac, who's legally blind.
Yes.
Who on the day when the laptop became public, sat outside of his shop and gave an interview and flat out says that he doesn't remember seeing me. He couldn't identify me. And also that his security cameras that he has don't have any footage from that time. And so regardless of anything, just this, the laptop, according to Lev Parnas, under oath in his testimony before the House Oversight Committee, was being sought by Rudy Giuliani in Ukraine in all the way back in 2018. And so Rudy Giuliani is working with a guy named Andrei Derkach, who was a MP in Ukraine and a known Russian GRU agent. So Rudy goes over there and basically takes his dossier and receives information that Hunter Biden's hard drive, not laptop, is for sale. And the person that they can go to is this other Ukrainian-Russian oligarch who is living in Austria.
All right, so we're going to pick this up on the other side. Let's pause it right there and back it up about 10 seconds so we can hit the ground running right there. And I got to admit, it makes the story of the laptop being found a little bit suspicious. We'll see if we can't, you know, connect the dots here and draw the lines in between what the official story is and what they're saying now. But I guess to sum up, what they're intimating is that this hard drive was somehow hacked from, the information was hacked from Hunter Biden, put on a fake laptop. Somebody went and dropped it off to a blind computer repairman saying they were Hunter Biden. And that's how it got into the mainstream media. We'll pick this up on the other side.
Do you want to try some?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. We'll send you some methylene blue. And if you guys want to get it too, you can get it from thealexjonesstore.com. I invented two proprietary products. Gavin, I'm a business owner, supplement formulator, Power Plant and Methyl Drive. You guys got to get them right now. Magnesium, CoQ10, PQQ, Rhodiola Rosea, Golden Root. It's got the cordyceps, the zinc, the selenium. It's got the boron as well. Raise your free testosterone. Raise your ability to get through hard days and hard tasks. And ultimately raise the potential of the methylene blue that you're probably already taking if you're watching this network. We have that available for you. It's a really good deal, really good price. People just kind of across the internet have told me they've started taking it and they've been able to get to the gym again. They've been able to get through hard days at work again. Specifically, that power plant formula If you're looking for something like Supermeal Vitality from back in the day, I basically invented a better version of that. That's called Power Plant. It's available solo or also in the Power Drive bundle at thealexjonesstore.com. Look up what proper magnesium does for your body. Look up what proper methylated vitamin B12 does for your body. All of that and more is in Power Plant and Methyl Drive, and you can get them all three together on the Power Drive bundle along with the other phenomenal products. We have the turmeric. We've got the MK Ultra, which is a phenomenal multivitamin, also nootropic as well. Ultimate Burn. If you really, you're trying to lose a little bit of weight, here's the thing. I've been doing a good job. I'm almost down to like 205 now. If you want to join me on a weight loss journey, you can get yourself some Ultimate Burn. And all the other products we have, like Methylene Red specifically, are also great for that. Methylene Red also has that CoQ10. Get the turmeric, get the blue, get the gummies, get the colostrum. My grandma is not capping on jaw for real. It really helped her with her hair if you want it. We've got the T3 Trifecta Iodine, an absolute staple of the old network. We've got the Ultimate Sea Moss, Ultimate Turmeric, the Bovine Beef Tallow. It's got the Methylene Blue inside the tallow, incredible antioxidant, Methylene Blue. I already went over it, tried to with Gavin a little bit. We've got the Zeolite, incredible for heavy metal support, dechelation, stuff like that. The Shilajit Complex, we've even got smelling salts. Ultimate Life Force, which is absolutely incredible. It's got the natokinase in there. It's got things theoretically to, you know, attenuate certain anecdotal things with the spike protein. Not making a health claim there. Talk to your doctor. It's just a top-rated formula for a reason. The Ultimate CMOS gummies in another form. The creatine, the Ultimate Power. We've got tons of sales on the different forms and flavors of the Ultimate Power pre-workout. We've got the NAD. We've got the Methyl Drive. We've got the MK Ultra. We've got Optimal Human. I got drink mixes for you. I got powders. I got energy gum. This is what you need. We have an electrolyte powder. It is so important in the summer months to get proper electrolyte support. And if you look at a lot of these blends on the grocery store shelf, they are pure garbage. Get yourself some Optimal Human. Get yourself some beef tallow. Get yourself some Atomic Defense. All of that and more is available at thealexjonesstore.com. I did not even mention the water filtration, the shower filtration that we have, the Patriot apparel that we have, the collectible coins memorabilia that we have. Literally everything that you could ever want theoretically or practically to support this operation, you can get at thealexjonesstore.com. This is what makes us different. Other people do a show so they can sell a product. We sell the best products in the world so that we can do the best show in the world. That's what makes this operation completely different, completely viewer, listener, supported, funded, owned by you at home when you decide, when you choose to make the decision to support us and get the phenomenal products at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm telling you again, the Power Drive Bundle, Methyl Drive, Power Plant, Methylene Blue, that is like the trifecta.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. We are reviewing some clips out of the bombshell interview between Hunter Biden and Tucker Carlson. And I gotta say, it's not making things clearer so far. We'll return to the answer that Hunter Biden had to a question about his laptop. And this, again, this is why I say it's like looking behind the curtain, looking, you know, behind the scenes at the sausage making factory. Kind of everybody is lying all the time. They're also all friends behind the scenes. I think it's a bit of a revelation to me that Tucker Carlson asked Hunter Biden to write his son's letter of recommendation to get into college. Like that, obviously, the elite circles do things a little bit differently than us normal people. But like, and I didn't really even apply to college, so I don't even know who I would have asked. But I mean, you want to be pretty close to somebody. I mean, you're asking somebody to put their name to guarantee, you know, to argue in favor of their son. Like, you can kind of lose face if you're writing a letter of recommendation for somebody that you don't know. You got to know them at least pretty well for the letter of recommendation to mean anything. And you got to be pretty close overall to even ask the question. hey, would you write a letter of recommendation? Again, I can understand why Tucker would want to do that, and I understand that Tucker's been in D.C. for his entire life, intergenerationally, and obviously the people who are at these higher levels are much more friendly behind the scenes than they seem to be up front. But again, I wonder about sort of the tightrope that Tucker is walking here, where he is, in a way, doing outreach to the left, possibly as a consequence of or in pursuit of political ambitions that he may hold. And so this is probably a pretty smart way to do it, especially if you're not trying to appeal to the radical DSA psychopaths, but more of the traditional, you know, Democrats who still, for some reason, think that Democrats are like they were in the 90s. You talk to the average Democrat and you're like, you know, well, what do you think about abortion? And they're like, oh, safe, legal, and rare. And it's like, well, that hasn't been the position for 20 years. For 20 years, the Democrat position has been up to birth as maximal as possible, as many as we possibly can, because they're selling the body parts for cash. But they're kind of on a, so I can imagine somebody like that watching this interview and going, you know, I never liked Tucker Carlson, but if he's willing to sit down with Hunter Biden and if they're willing to break bread, and I really liked Biden and they seem to be, you know, I can see why he's doing it strategically. But it is a tightrope walk. It is a risk because on the other hand, you're going to make people on the right go, so wait, you were like good friends with Hunter Biden this entire time? Did you know what he was up to? Like, why would you ask that guy to write a letter of recommendation? Except that you were interested in using his name, which falls in line with the patterns. But even as they're saying this, so he's about midway through, and we'll keep playing it here, the response about the laptop entering into the mainstream conversation. And interestingly, like, bizarrely, I guess what they're going with is that it was Russian disinformation. It was a Russian hack job of some sort that for some reason it was laundered through a GRU, you know, secret agent from Russia who was in the Ukraine parliament, who got the stuff from a blind guy who Hunter Biden doesn't remember going to. But it's like, well, what do you remember from that time? Mr. Biden, would having a lapse in memory be consistent with perhaps some of your other lifestyle choices around that time? Were you not there, or do you not remember going there? Because those are two very different things. And even in a cursory glance of this, and maybe I should let it play because they get into the details where he's talking about, it's not the laptop, it was just a hard drive, it was just information, and they must have hacked my cloud. But hacking somebody's cloud will give you access to like their, I guess it could give you access to their passwords, but mostly, you know, it's like the big hack of people's iClouds of all the celebrities and their nude photos came out. Like, it's your photo roll. It's the information that you have stored on the cloud, but it wouldn't give you automatically access to like a Gmail account or private server email accounts where many of the emails from Hunter Biden originally originated. Again, why I say the sausage being made is everybody seems to be lying about everything all the time. So hard to put your finger on the pulse and figure out what's actually going on, but the FBI did gather the laptop from the guy who claimed that Hunter Biden dropped it off, and they confirmed that it was Hunter Biden's laptop. They connected the laptop itself and its serial number to the serial number of the laptop that was used to create the iCloud account that was Hunter Biden. So is the FBI lying or is Hunter Biden lying? It's sort of a wash. I know, you know, it's not like, well, you know, one of these is very trustworthy, the other one's not. No, they both have very good motive to lie. But if you'll remember, the real scandal, there are two real scandals about the Hunter Biden laptop. The one was that it exposed very corrupt dealings, very dirty dealings, very suspicious dealings with some of his law partners, some of his business partners, references to 10% to the big guy. I mean, there was some pretty clear evidence of some malfeasance going on behind the scenes, but it was the real story, the real conspiracy about it was that it was censored by big tech at the behest of the Biden administration, at the behest of the FBI, rather, because this would have been the tail end of Trump's first administration. And yet it was the FBI reaching out to big tech and saying, we've heard there's Russian disinformation coming down the pipe, so we want you to be aware of it. So if there's no lapse in time, as soon as this information hits your platforms, we want you to take it down right away because it's Russian disinformation. Hunter Biden seems to be pushing that same line, which was never true because the information was accurate. How it was gathered, who found the information, who leaked it, I guess is what they're discussing now. But it was never a question that this was absolutely real information. It was real photos, real conversations had, right? So that's never been a question. And again, according to the FBI and according to the Wikipedia article about it, in December 2019, under the authority of a subpoena issued by a Wilmington grand jury, the FBI seized the laptop from Mac Isaac. FBI investigators handling Hunter's laptop quickly concluded in 2019 that the laptop was genuinely his, and did not seem to have been tampered with or manipulated. In June 2024, federal prosecutors utilized the laptop as evidence in part of a criminal case against Hunter Biden, alongside testimony from an FBI agent involved in authenticating and investigating the laptop. So again, just keep that in mind as we hear this, the conspiracy theory that Hunter Biden and Tucker actually are both about to lay out. I don't see how that's consistent with the forensic, you know, investigation that was done proving that it was in fact Hunter Biden's laptop and it was not tampered with. And maybe that's the FBI lying, but the one thing that makes me want to trust the FBI in this case is that they'd be much more inclined to hide and censor this stuff if you look at all their past behavior. You know, the FBI often lies, not usually to benefit the Republicans, the right wing conservatives, certainly not Trump and his administration. But of course, Israel is in here too. And once again, I just think I don't like Israel. I've never liked Israel. I've been against Israel more or less my whole life since I was aware of geopolitics as a concept. Been pretty well versed on the senseless and seemingly bottomless evil that bubbles out of Israel on a regular basis. That being said, just because somebody else doesn't like Israel doesn't mean they're right about literally anything else, or a good person, or a decent person, or even telling the truth about their feelings about Israel. So I don't understand why this has become such an easy grift for people to get support on the dissident right by merely being anti-Israel. It's clearly not enough. But let's get back to the conspiracy theory about how Hunter Biden's actual information ended up in the mainstream news.
Go to is this Ukrainian-Russian oligarch who is living in Austria. That's what Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman were doing, getting on the plane before they were arrested.
So how did
before John Paul McIsaac was ever a twinkle in anybody's eye?
I believe that the story that was always the weak part of the story. Like he drops off
so
laptops.
So even
and
John
them.
Paul McIsaac, okay, from there is no such thing as a laptop. The laptop that he eventually turns over a year later, 18 months later, to the FBI. The thing that is distributed and disseminated that John Paul McIsaac claims that he got off of a device was a hard drive. And that hard drive had a limited amount of information, a limited amount of like gigabytes. I don't know the difference between a gigabyte and a whatever. And that goes into the hands. He somehow can't find anybody. You can't throw a stone in Trolley Square without hitting someone that knows me personally.
Right.
And he knows that. He's lived there his whole life. Instead, what he finds through this guy, Applebaum, is Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Bob Costello. He turns over this hard drive. The hard drive becomes the platform from which all of the other stolen information from, which by the way, every single, forensic expert has made it clear, is that there's no possible way all of the information that was eventually, labeled as my laptop came from one laptop. It's like it's way too large.
Came off the cloud.
Exactly. They hacked my cloud. I write about this in this book.
One.
So on Substack, I'm laying all of this out.
Again, let's pause it right there real quick and we'll go back and again, let him explain it. But this is being presented as if this is like discrediting to the original story. If you have a Mac laptop, this is not confusing at all. If you get into the laptop has your photos, has your chat, and has your email. It has everything on the laptop. It might not be on the hard drive, but it's kind of hard to tell. Like it looks like it's on the hard. It there's like a preview that's on the hard drive, but then it actually gets the thing from the cloud. But this isn't really a distinction. He's saying, well, nothing, you know, all of this couldn't fit on a single hard drive. First of all, yes, it probably could. You know, you can get a terabyte hard drive in a MacBook and store plenty on that. A lot of video, a lot of photo, a lot of like endless text. So the idea that this is too much information for a single laptop doesn't even really make sense, especially not when that laptop is directly linked to the cloud. Having the laptop would effectively give you all of that information. You wouldn't even really have to hack it. The only hacking would be getting into the laptop itself. Once you're in that, all the photos are there for all intents and purposes. I mean, you open up the Finder window, the file's there, you click it, you double click it. It might take an extra second to download from the cloud, but it pops up and it looks like it's on your laptop. So again, this is all very suspicious to me. I don't get his, like, so the laptop information was real, the photos are real, the communication is real, the hard drive, I guess he's saying, you know, he's like, it wasn't a laptop, it was a hard drive. Hard drives are inside laptops. This is not all that complicated. It's like, it wasn't a car, it was an engine. It's like, well, okay, but the car has the engine in it, so it's the important part. The hard drive is where all the information is in the laptop. It being removed from the laptop doesn't change anything. And again, this has been used in criminal proceedings. It was never questioned at that point. The FBI has testified under oath that they authenticated the laptop. That was never questioned or challenged in court, not successfully anyway. So we'll keep listening, but just keep in mind, this is contrary to everything else that we already know. Or at least he's doing what I like to say media does, which is tell you the truth but leave you believing a lie. Everything he's saying is probably true. He probably doesn't have a memory of dropping it off at the store. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he did. He's probably telling the truth. He doesn't have a memory of it. Probably telling the truth that the guy's half blind. He's probably telling the truth that, you know, there's some guy in Ukraine that had also, you know, had access to the laptop, because apparently this information was being shared all over the place, the higher levels in secret. It doesn't discredit the laptop itself, what was contained in it, or anything about the official story. So far, I've seen nothing to contradict the official story. And yet, if you listen to this, it sounds like it's very mysterious how this all came together. Not in my memory. So let's go back.
And there's a whole, the NDI, the whole thing about, there's these different silos. There's the Netanyahu silo, the Israeli side. There is a Russian-Ukrainian side of it. And then there are the U.S. actors that include Steve Bannon, Rudy Giuliani, Miles Gao, and a whole bunch of, you know, Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman and all of these guys.
Well, once the material starts circulating, the data from the cloud,
yeah,
you know, all kinds of people get involved and they're shopping it for different reasons. Yeah. And I agree.
Yes. And so, but my point
but
is,
who stole it?
Well, from the cloud?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You have as good a guess as mine in terms of actually who was the original hacker of that information, who has the capacity to be able to do it. And so, you know, I have
but
my,
you don't
I
have evidence.
I don't have a forensic, a digital forensic, evidence that it was hacked by this person or this entity or this organization, that it was Mossad or that it was the GRU or that right. It was, or that it was some kid in his basement and, right. You know, that, you know, figured it out. But here's the point. Overall, here's the thing. Is I get caught in these conversations about all of this. But the reality is this. Of what was distributed that was authentic, it's all mine. All those emails.
Yeah, yeah, I got it.
Buckley. And you know what? You know what? Not a single one of them proves? Of any criminality of my father whatsoever. Of any way in which I ever sent an email saying, hey, Dad, I need you to get this done on behalf of a client of mine. Now, I think that's dispositive. And I challenge anybody. Because it's all out there.
Just 10% for the big guy.
Digital footprint. And I'm not just talking about my emails. I'm talking about, or 20 years of emails. I'm talking about 20 years of text messages. I'm talking about erased voicemails. Like deleted voicemails. Deleted photographs.
They don't actually delete, is what you're saying.
They clearly don't. I mean, voicemails. From my dad to me, but that's not the only voicemail that was out there. But not a single one of them in which I say, hey, when my dad is in office or in power as vice president or president, in which I say, hey, dad, I need you to do this for me, or even contacting one of his staffers. So either I'm incredibly, incredibly, incredibly good at, you know, inactive addiction as a crack addict, or it doesn't exist. It truly, literally doesn't exist. The entire narrative of the Biden crime family.
Again, I don't see that. I don't understand how that discredits anything. I mean, 10% to the big guy. We have example after example. I mean, all this stuff was, you know, 6 years ago at this point. I'm just like racking my memory, trying to remember all the crap that was exposed during the Hunter Biden laptop series. And it says 10 held for H for the big guy. The H in that is Hunter Biden, and the big guy 100% is Joe Biden. Why do you say that's 100%? It's crystal clear. There's nobody else that would be listing as the big guy. So again, yes, it does. It does show tit for tat. It shows quid pro quo negotiations. It also talks about him introducing people to his dad. We don't have the contents of that conversation. So again, I feel like this is just a lie, just playing on people's gullibility. And just going, you know, it didn't prove anything. It didn't show anything wrong. It's like, well, first of all, yes, it did. Second of all, why would they lie and conspire with big tech to silence it if it wasn't bombshell information? Why did 51 intelligence agents sign a letter claiming it was Russian disinformation when you acknowledge that all of it was absolutely true? Again, the conspiracy around this, of the FBI warning big tech companies not to spread this information, Twitter taking down New York Post's entire account because they posted it, claiming it was hacked material. There's been no evidence it was hacked material. There has been court-presented evidence to the exact contrary. The 51 intelligence agents writing a letter, not saying it was Russian disinformation, saying it had all the hallmarks of Russian disinformation. That way, they could justify asking people to censor it because it might be Russian disinformation. But when it comes out that it's not, you can say, well, we never said it was. Yeah, very sophisticated stuff here. I hope you're not falling for it. Let's go to clip C now. Again, Hunter Biden with Tucker Carlson. And again, I'm not trying to rain on Tucker's attempt here to do whatever it is he's doing, but I really don't see the value of rehabilitating Hunter Biden and trying to claim that his laptop was anything other than what it was, which was a bombshell story about the corruption of the Biden family that dropped just before an election, but was completely censored at the behest of and with the cooperation of the intelligence agencies who should have known better and should have investigated this stuff themselves. And then maybe, you know, wouldn't have been a big issue. But let's go now to clip number C. Where they try to blame Israel for the laptop story. Again, could be true. There could be some validity in that. We know how obviously Trump administration has benefited Israel far, far more than the Biden administration. I don't doubt that they would have a motive to interfere in the election. But is this not just playing on people's preconceived notions about Israel in order to sway them emotionally? Let's go to clip number C here.
The allegation that there was abusive minors proven on the laptop, that came from the Israelis. I'm just telling you that. They came to me with that, so I know that. And one of the things that enraged me about the statement from those sleazy intel guys is that they blame the Russians for it. Now, maybe the Russians had a hand in it, but it was the Israelis who were pushing that fact. I mean, literally to me.
Yeah.
So.
And you've gone through it.
But they're all such slaves.
Is there anything? I want to clear with your entire, like, you know, not a single thing in my anything that is in any way true about that.
Well, that's such a serious crime that I think.
Yeah, what is he
it's
saying?
It's just common sense that if there was evidence of that.
You think that it's common sense? I'll tell you what. About 40 million people on X don't think that. You know, I mean, it's like.
There was an abusive minors in there? If there was evidence of
that. You know how many people call me a pedophile? To this day? Anyway,
Do we need to show the photos?
But I agree with you. That's exactly.
Do we need to show the photos?
And, you know, it's,
But they were pushing that so hard, and all the intel guys were like, oh, it's Russia. It's like, you lie. Because they called me. I sent one of my producers out to go meet with
one of a guy connected to Netanyahu. They were behind that. And I felt that everybody in DC knew that, but there was so much pressure never to criticize Israel in any way that they were just like, it's the Russians. They're the ones penetrating our political system. It's like, you lie. Everyone knows what's actually happening. This was my perspective, and it drove me insane. And by the way, I didn't say that on Fox News. I'll admit it. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. You're right. I just want to say I was part of the problem also, but I knew it.
But that's a thing, Tucker.
Yeah,
I agree. So we're here now.
Yeah. No, I didn't say we see Israelis.
No, I'm saying, but we're here now.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why, just on a purely selfish basis for me. Is that, like, I don't know how you could possibly have thought that of me. And by not saying it, I thought that you thought that of me. I mean, it is.
Thought that the child molestation thing?
Or whatever. Yeah. All the stuff that they were saying. Yeah. Or any of it. You know what I mean? Like
Well, people addicted to drugs, especially cocaine, I know for a fact, get pretty dark. That's just a fact. They do. They do. They definitely do. And it.
Oh, yeah.
And the cocaine thing.
By the way, it's all there.
No, I guess.
You can watch it all.
I guess I don't need to tell you that.
You can see the motel rooms.
But I've seen it.
And
you're not the only
thing.
Person I've seen this.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a big difference.
It screws up your sex thing.
Yeah, there's a big difference between that and the reality of what's out there, which is the worst thing that you can possibly say about any. And that's my point.
Yeah, I mean, what was your point exactly? I don't understand. I mean, is he not? Do we not have his text messages where he's literally ordering hookers from people that are associated with some unsavory characters? Are there not photos of him being a little too close for comfort with some of his niece's underage friends? I mean, there's photos of this stuff. The incest, the dead brother's wife. Do we remember that aspect? So, like, what exactly is the... What is he discrediting here? What is he claiming didn't actually happen? He's like, look, I was a good whoremonger crackhead, but there's no proof I'm a pedophile. It's like, this is not convincing. I don't know who this is convincing. Certainly ain't convincing me. We'll show more clips of this on the other side, but we'll have to move on, especially because we have a guest in the third hour, Austin Franco, the young man who... It's basically become enemy number one of a lot of people for daring to suggest that he didn't want to work for Jewish people. Very excited to talk to him later in the show. So stay tuned for that. But we'll get back to Hunter Biden and Tucker. We got two more clips to show you on the other side, and then we'll move on. Remember, support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. Incredible new deals, incredible new products on sale now. Thealexjonesstore.com keeps us on the air and in the fight and telling the truth and trying desperately to see clearly when even our allies seem to be mixed up in the fog.
Planet Earth, filter your water. Stop turning my frog friends gay. This I command.
The Alex Jones Store.com. Fight the globalist takeover now.
A scarlet martini before breakfast? You minx. Are you trying to outdo me in corruption? Or shall we make it a team effort?
Of course not, darling. This is Methylene Red from the Alex Jones Store.com.
The Ultra Methylene Red, madame. Bold, refined, and unapologetically potent. It optimizes cellular energy at the deepest level, delivers razor-sharp cognition, and ignites a warm, invigorating rush that spread through every vein.
Hey, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding fathers on patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
Darka, darka, Muhammad Jihad. Darka, darka, Muhammad Jihad. Darka, darka, Muhammad Jihad. Darka, darka, Muhammad Jihad. Darka, Darka, Muhammad Jihad.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
We're supposed to hate Tucker Carlson because he's an anti-Semite and he's this. I know you're not an anti-Semite. I 100% know that you're not an anti-Semite.
No.
Yeah. No, that's what my point being is that.
No, I would just say so.
My point being is that, like, if it's anti-Semitic to point out that Bibi Netanyahu is evil incarnate, then you know what? I don't know what to say to people anymore. I mean, all you have to do is just open your eyes. Just literally open your eyes. Open your heart for 1 minute.
Yeah.
And realize, you know,
it's such an obvious lie. It's like, who's even intimidated by that anymore?
My point is like, how is it possible that they're dividing us on things like that?
I agree.
And I can tell you how it's possible. It's the distraction that is being created by a handful of individuals and the people that work for them to keep us divided through our algorithm.
Sounds anti-Semitic to me. What people? What people are trying to keep us divided, Hunter? Who's they, exactly? Look, Bibi Netanyahu being evil, it really is. Like, okay, it is astonishing that people won't just admit that or say that out loud, but it's also like saying the sky is blue. I don't actually give credit to people saying it. I just am deeply suspicious of people who won't. And so, yes, Bibi Netanyahu is evil. That doesn't mean Hunter Biden isn't. Do you understand? Who's trying to divide us? The reason that these words have so much power is entirely because the left has gone completely insane and for the last decade decided that any act of anything other than basically abject submission to whoever claims minority position, whoever claims oppression, you're not allowed to criticize them in any way, even if the criticism has absolutely nothing to do with the immutable characteristic that makes them a oppressed minority or whatever else. You have to be destroyed over it. See, that's the table that's been laid that we're all now eating at. It's not just that anti-Semitism is such a vile thing that follows along racism being such a vile thing or misogyny being such a vile thing. When in reality, all of these things are fabricated nonsense from people who want to shut you up by labeling your comments something negative when in fact it is just the truth in reality. So, again, I don't feel like we need Hunter Biden to tell us this. I don't feel like he's a hero for saying this. I don't feel like it's something particularly to celebrate or to congratulate. Why is Hunter Biden saying this supposed to be newsworthy or important or valuable? It's not. It's just not. It really is just evidence of the fact that Hunter Biden is not obligated by his current position to lie to us. Like, that's really all that's going on here. And people are unfortunately so starved for just basic honesty and truth that they will celebrate Hunter Biden as a truth teller for saying the sky is blue and grass is green. Really, it's just an indictment of the rest of our culture who refuse to acknowledge that and will call you anti-Semitic for saying it. So yeah, again, whether it's AOC, and we'll get to the videos later, AOC, or anybody on the left claiming that you were never locked down and nobody was ever fired for racism and defund the police never actually happened. Yeah, all of these things actually happened. And yes, the left was the tip of the spear, was the force by which all of American culture has been held hostage, where you're not allowed to say certain things. You're not allowed to express certain conclusions. You're not even allowed to express certain information that could lead to certain conclusions, because otherwise you must hate, insert whatever type of person. You were happy to contribute to that. You were happy to perpetuate that. Now, those same rules you applied to everybody else are being applied to you, and suddenly you recognize how bad it is. That's not anti-Semitism. Well, wasn't he literally last week telling Nick Fuentes that it was racism to talk about crime rates in the black community? How is that any different? Hunter Biden is full of crap. I'm sorry that the Alex Jones Network has to be the one to tell you this, but it's obvious and true. And just look at what he says to Tucker versus what he said to Nick Fuentes. You'll see he's not over and above this. He's not a free speech warrior that just wants to tell the truth and is sick of everybody getting in the way with all these claims. He'll call you a racist for talking about crime amongst the black community, but he doesn't want you talking about anti-Semitism.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Lee has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. Please do share that link and share our content however you can. We really do appreciate it. Cannot thank you enough for supporting us by either sharing our content, just hitting that like button, and of course going to the alexjonesstore.com. Helps us stay on the air and get our great guests, like my guest, Austin Franco. Austin Franco can be followed on X at AustinFranco123 and on Instagram at Austin.Franco with a zero instead of an O at the end. You may know him. He's in a lot of trouble. He's in a lot of trouble these days from the power structures in America for daring to suggest that he wouldn't want to work for somebody of a Jewish persuasion. And since then, boy, things have gotten crazy, haven't they, Austin? Thank you so much for coming on the show, sir.
Yeah, it's good to meet you, Harrison.
It's very nice to meet you, and I can't even keep up with everything happening to you right now. There's like hidden video camera of people spying on you, trying to, you know, film your stand. Yeah. Can you just lay it out from your perspective? What's happened? Like, what happened? What has the timeline been between you sort of rejecting this job offer to where we are now? Can you tell us your story?
Yeah. So after I rejected the job offer with Einhorn, about a month or so afterwards, you had the AIM undercover interview. And then after that is when I decided to go on Piers Morgan, because I was like, all right, you know, they're going to interview me no matter what. I might as well say what I want to say and do it on a big enough platform where people can make their minds up for themselves.
And of course, Piers Morgan kicked you off, didn't he? He sort of ended the interview earlier than he should have, which is a little, the name of his program is Uncensored, which, you know, maybe needs a new name or something, because clearly a little bit of censorship still exists there. And I've read that you've been kicked out of your house. I mean, is that true? What's the story there?
Yeah. So originally what happened was, back when the original event happened with Einhorn, was I was going to go on podcast, but my parents were like, if you go on a podcast, we're kicking you out. So I was like, okay, let's wait for things to die down. And then maybe we can reconsider in the future when, you know, things are less heated. So that's ultimately what happened. And then after, you know, I went viral on Piers, they were like, you know, you got to get out. You know, we can't have you here anymore. We've got reporters at our house. We're getting blowback again. My dad had to take his page down again on his law firm website. And then my mom was also getting heat as well. So I think they were just kind of done with it at that point, and thought it would be better if they distanced themselves from me.
Well, that's troubling to hear. I obviously don't agree with that. That's what is it about? So let's again start from the beginning. So because if people don't know what we're talking about or who Einhorn is, so Gabe Einhorn owns a company, and I'd heard sort of conflicting stories. I'd heard that he was sort of pestering you and sort of kept asking you and kept and going, oh, you want it? And finally it was sort of out of exasperation that you said, look, I just don't want to work for Jews, and you're Jewish, this is why, if you really want an answer. Am I mischaracterizing that, or like, what was the character there? And then we'll pick it up from what happened after that. But what was the relationship between you and Gabe Einhorn, and was he pressuring you, or how did that all work out?
Yeah, so I originally applied for the job. I think it was maybe 2-3 weeks before I sent the message. And he kept pestering me, asking me, you know, to attend his group interviews. And I think it was Sunday night when he had the interview, and I didn't show up because I had work. And then he sent me a follow-up text. I think it was either 1, 2, or 3 follow-up texts. I'm not exactly sure. I'd have to go back and look. And I was just like, okay, you know what? What's the best way to make sure this guy doesn't respond to me again? I knew he was Jewish prior to the interview, and that's partly why I didn't decide to work for the company. I was like, you know, not only am I not getting paid, I also have had bad experiences with Jews. This is probably the last thing I want to do. And so I basically said, you know, I don't want to work for a Jew. Thank you for the opportunity. I was like, I don't want to work for a Jew. Thanks. That was the exact quote. So, you know, I was just trying to be nice about it, in the sense that he knew the reason why I didn't want to work for him. You know, a lot of companies are just like, sorry, we can't hire you, right? And by providing him a specific reason, he was like, okay, this is exactly why he doesn't want to work for me. At least we know.
And probably he's thinking, hey, if that's how he feels, I don't want him working for me either. You would think that would work. And so then it gets interesting, because then you have some inputs for some very powerful figures. But just sticking on that, what was the react, like, when you sent it, were you thinking, like, this is kind of an offensive thing? I'm just wondering what your mindset is. Again, not to be like, are you an anti-Semite? But, like, were you thinking this would become a big deal? Were you thinking this would maybe piss him off? Were you trying to be a little trollish? I'm just wondering, like, what you thought the reaction would be versus what the reaction was.
So I originally intended to do it on the phone call, because, you know, I'd been kind of testing these things out prior, you know, seeing what the kind of culture and prevailing sentiment was on, you know, Israel and the Jewish people. Like, you just say certain things at work, you know, among friends, kind of gauge the reaction to understand where things are. And based on things like the Epstein files, the war on Iran, and, you know, AIPAC as well, and what I had been seeing on social media, I was like, okay, I think we're reaching a point where if they were to try to cancel me or do anything against me, this is going to completely backfire on them.
Hmm.
So I wasn't inclined originally to go and post it in text format. I was originally going to try it out over the call, but I couldn't make the call. So I was like, the interview. So I was like, okay, this is probably not a good idea. Let's just leave it. And I kind of forgot about it. And then he messaged me, and I was like, all right, there's the conceivable possibility here that this goes viral. And there are two options here for Cornell, assuming I go through with this. One is they expel me, which I don't think they do. The university I'm attending at Cornell is a public, it's the ILR college. So it's run by the SUNY system, which is the New York college system. So I knew I had free speech protection, and I didn't think Cornell would expel me. And the second option I ran through was that, if Cornell doesn't expel me, what does this indicate to me about Jewish support in America and Jewish power, specifically in the institutions, if they don't expel me? And it certainly means to me, if they don't do that, that there is weakening support for Israel and the Jewish cause in America. So that's kind of what prompted me. I was kind of like, okay, I have this prediction. I have this theory, right? Let's test it out. Let's see what happens. And, you know, I also had experiences as well. But I was kind of curious to see where things would go. So,
yeah, that is very interesting. I think the response has been a little bit odd. I think it's not been what people expected, that, you know, you would be roundly condemned and, you know, basically be living on the street at this point. Of course, they got you kicked out of your house. So there is, you know, some of that. And again, I want to get back to that, because I find it so ridiculous. But on the other hand, you've gotten a ton of support, right? I mean, in your experience, as you're receiving it, are you getting more hate or more support?
More support,
right,
to be honest. And I think that's where we're headed, is people are kind of done with the cancellation culture, and people saying, oh, you know, you have a bad view, we're going to ruin your life. So I'm glad people are banding together and collectivizing.
And, you know, interestingly, it was Gabe Einhorn that then published a tweet that basically was like reflecting that. He was going, hey, basically to my fellow Jews, here's a little temperature check for you. I currently have people saying they don't want to work for Jews. Like, hey, maybe, you know, this problem of anti-Semitism is actually pretty big. Like, and he said, I don't want to destroy the kid's life. It wasn't like an attack against you. It didn't seem from the beginning. It seemed more like a warning shot to the Jews. Just go, hey, guys, here's what the current, you know, culture is around universities. You know, our attempts to correct this are not succeeding. Our attempts to, you know, fire the Columbia president have not, you know, succeeded in stopping people from saying stuff like this. And then who was it that basically said, no, you need to be a tough Jew. You need to let these people know that we'll destroy their lives. I'm blanking on the name, right? Because it wasn't Andreessen. Who was it that then responded to Gabe Einhorn?
Joe Lonsdale.
Joe, that's right. Joe Lonsdale.
I think he's the co-founder of Palantir.
Which is also extremely concerning that this is the mindset of the people that that run Palantir. And it was this deeply sort of aggressive, offensive, you need to make them scared of Jews kind of comment. And I wonder, as a very young guy, I mean, I'm only, you know, 36, but even as I was coming up, I think I have a different view of race and religion than older people do. And as a young person, I imagine you've grown up your entire life hearing the most vicious, vile, hateful things about white people. It's got to be hard to then be told, like, but you're not allowed to say anything else about anybody else. Was that a part of sort of your calculus going into this? Because I see that myself, and I even change the way I talk about stuff where I go, okay, people get now, this isn't from a place of hatred or, you know, racial hatred or whatever. This is playing by the current rules. This is fair is fair. And if we're going to be demonized for our group, then don't be angry if your group gets demonized in the exact same way. How much of that was going through your mind?
I don't know if that specifically was related to me deciding to put in writing, you know, I don't want to work for a Jew, thanks. But it is certainly something that is in the back of my mind. But specifically for the Einhorn stuff, I don't think it was related at all. That was more related to, let's see what happens if we kind of like throw this bomb in here, right? Mm. And, you know, let's see if it hits or not.
Hmm. Oh, it hit. it clearly hit.
Yeah.
So yeah, Joe Lonsdale.
Yeah.
So what was that like? I mean, when did you first see that tweet and what happened after that? How did you first become aware that this was becoming a bigger story?
Yeah, people were reaching out to me over text, people I knew. And I had an X account tied to my Google account, but that one was suspended for some reason, like months prior. I don't know why. I think they thought it was a bot account. So I had to create a new account to address the situation because I was like, you know, I'm garnering all this media attention. Let me, you know, put my side of the story out there.
And so, I mean, what was your initial reaction? Like when you see this happening, it's kind of a weird experience, right? Because you're probably on X or looking at this stuff. Suddenly it's your name being talked about. Like how did that impact? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Like what went through your mind when you realized that this was in fact becoming a national story?
I thought it was pretty interesting. I mean, it was probably the most fun I'd had in a while. So
to be honest,
I mean, I kind of enjoyed it.
You weren't scared. You know. You weren't scared by the tough Jews. You weren't cowed into a submission by Joe Lonsdale. Really? I'm shocked.
No, I was kind of looking at my life, not in like a bad way, but just looking at the cards on the table and realistically assessing, okay, what's the prospects? I have a job and a family, you know, I can get a house and all those things. And I didn't really see a future, to be honest. And when that happens, and I think it's happening for a lot of young white men, for instance, you're going to see more drastic moves, probably more drastic in the future than what I'm even doing.
Mm.
Just because the cards on the table are not there. The social contract of, you know, being able to reproduce, to have kids, all those things have kind of been wiped off the table, given to other people, from foreign countries. So the end result is this, is you basically have a bunch of men who are like, okay, I have no future. I'm going to have to take pretty extreme actions to have any semblance of upward mobility. And so that's kind of where I was at. I was like, what is my life going to look like 5 years down the road? Right. Am I going to have a nice job? Right. Am I going to have a family? I might have a family, but you know, am I going to have a nice job and I'm going to provide for them? Right. And live a good life. And I didn't really see it there. And this is not coming from like a place of mental illness or anything. It's just realistically assessing the situation and saying, okay, what's going to be the best outcome here? And I was like, we have this golden opportunity right here to garner some sense of attention and fame. Although, you know, certain people might hate you and certain people might love you, but this is probably your best shot at kind of making something of yourself, which you otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah, and I totally get that. So you're basically, you're weighing sort of the options. You're going, okay, one option is I keep my mouth shut. I do something I don't really want to do. And at the end of exactly. that road, there's nothing really. You're not, yeah. you know, it's like, yeah. what's the reward for that? Nothing? Okay, why would I choose that? I'll take this risk that yeah. may turn out badly, but has a chance to turn out well. The other way, you're just guaranteed nothingness, right? You're guaranteed grayness. Yep. You're guaranteed to work a job yeah. you might not like for people that you don't respect. For very little money, it's, you know, it's not a good option. So, you know, you take the chance. And I, you know, I think you're right. I think young people are, and I think this goes to why they're choosing socialists and communism. I think people are just going, we got to do something here. And my current, you know, what's currently being presented to me as options is not worth it. I'm going to try to make my own option here. My third exactly. option.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. And of course, you've gotten a ton of support, but the backlash is huge. And I want to remind people again, what you did was simply say, I don't want to work for Jews. Why do you think that is being treated as if you, like, actually physically tried to shove a Jew into a gas chamber? Because, I mean, they're trying to destroy your life, right? I can understand going, that's kind of a nasty thing to say. I'm not sure if I would have said it or, you know, man, it doesn't sound like a guy I'd want to be friends with. Okay, fine. That is a reasonable but this whole, like, we must destroy them. We must teach them a lesson. We must follow them around and make sure they never get a job. What is this overwhelming response to what is a maybe objectionable but not very evil thing to say? It's just a preference of yours. Why is the reaction so overwhelming?
I think it's because, to be honest, if you go back through history, you know, white people were able to create civilizations prior to the medieval ages, when the Jews kind of took on the role of banking and money changers, similar to the Knights Templars. They had not really created any civilizations. So I think when it comes down to it is that the Jew kind of needs to live off of the Jewish community specifically kind of needs to live off of white civilization. I'm not saying that's a bad or good thing, just, you know, what you're observing throughout history. Right. And white people, if they were to say, okay, we're no longer going to work with Jews, right? That means they no longer have positions of power. You know, we're not going to help them out, and they're kind of going to be stuck out in the mud, because it's not like the immigrants coming in. It's not like the Muslims like them either. So they're looking at this situation saying, okay, if white people cut us off, who are we going to be left to? Right. You know, the Muslims aren't going to help us. The Africans aren't going to help us. We're shit out of luck.
Yeah.
So that's what it comes down to, is I think this is, it's, they see it as a slippery slope where when, you know, white people decide we're going to freely associate again, there's no longer a place for them in society. And I'm speaking more generally, not, you know, my beliefs or anything like that, just predictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like, you know, talking about the historic role of Jews in medieval Europe, it's not a judgment one way or the other. It's just how it was. It's a fact. And in fact, exactly. When you look into that and you actually understand it, it makes a lot of sense. You're a landless people. You don't have a power structure that can protect you. So you have to rely on basically paying for protection from the countries that you're in. So of course you're going to care a lot more about having and retaining money than people who can trust their government, to get justice for it. Like when you really look into it, it's not saying, oh, Jews love money because they're evil. It's like, well, there's a historical, you know, paradigm to this, and the paradigm is currently changing. I think that's super interesting. So you don't think it's, you don't think it's like a legitimate, like, oh my God, the Holocaust is coming. It's more just like, if we don't retain our positions here, there's nowhere else to go. And, you know, we really don't have any other option here, which again, I wonder, then why is the response so outraged and so vicious and vengeful? It seems like if that was really the concern, they'd go, ooh, we better tamp the brakes a little bit and stop being so aggressive. But they're having the opposite reaction.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be working out for them, does it?
No, frankly, I'm not exactly sure why they're doing that. Though there is something I've noticed, is that you now have leftist Jews, especially on the Free Palestine side, who are now advocating openly for free speech. And this is kind of the dichotomy. You know, you have the Zionist Jews and then the anti-Zionist Jews. But a lot of these leftist Jews being like, oh, we should advocate for free speech. You know, we're anti-Zionist. And I think this is kind of where the Jewish movement is probably going to head, is kind of throwing in the towel on Israel, at least the smarter ones, and saying, we're going to advocate for free speech. We're going to be these beacons of liberty. That will allow them to preserve their power base a lot more effectively than kind of the, you know, let's go keep genociding Palestinians in Israel.
Right. Well, and
at least that would be my take on it.
And is that how they sort of gained their power base in America in the first place? I mean, this is the thing that doesn't make any sense to me is all of the Joe Lonsdale types who are like, we have to like basically force America, threaten America into listening to us. It's like America has never had a problem with Jews. Our entire existence, Jews have been a welcomed member of our society. And, you know, maybe you had like the country club wouldn't let you in, but certainly nothing systemically, you know, keeping them out in hundreds of years that that's the case. And certainly in the last 50 years, Jews have been celebrated everywhere in a lot of time, you know, in a lot of ways, because they tended to be the, you know, free speech side and would, you know, come out and talk about the value of, you know, not, you know, avoiding totalitarianism. Why would they not just embrace that and continue that, knowing that America is a perfectly safe respite for them, a perfectly safe place for them to be? They now seem to be almost trying to end that in order to force people to go to Israel. I mean, the pro-Zionist Jews very explicitly say sort of this vacation in America is over and it's time to remember who you are. You're not American. You're a Jew. And we've got, you know, there's a clip from earlier today or yesterday, the congressman basically saying, you know, we're not really American. We're Israeli and we need to support Israel over and above everything else. Again, this all seems like very bad strategy to me, because Americans love Jews and always have because of their valuable and positive contribution to our culture. But now it seems like they're going for this entirely different method of like trying to shut us up by force. It's not going to work, dude. I don't know what to tell you. But what's your take on that whole shift of the Jewish community here in America right now?
I think it's, you know, it partly comes down once again to this schism between the leftist Jews and the rightist Jews. And we're kind of going to have to see how that develops over the next, you know, year or two. You know, I don't really have a solid answer at this moment. The one thing I can say, though, is I do have more respect and, you know, my experiences as well, both with anti-Zionist Jews and Zionist Jews, is that the Zionist Jews are very honest about what their goal is. With the leftist Jews, you kind of don't know exactly what their goal is. It's kind of all over the place. But the Zionist Jews are very clear. We want a place for Israel and we want a homeland for the Jews. Like, at least you know what you're dealing with there. But the leftist Jews, there's no clear motive when it comes down to it. You have some advocating for free speech. You have some that are just anti-Zionist. There's no coherent thought process or goal within the movement. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to track and follow.
Well, so much of it is contradictory. You know, if you're in favor of immigration, but, you know, you let in a bunch of Muslims and suddenly, oh, my God, we can't allow Muslims. It's like, well, who brought them in the first place? Like, what the hell? You know, everything is sort of changing. And just like we were talking about when it comes to, you know, talking about medieval times or whatever else, it's like, this is just the fact. This is the way it is. And trying to force your own ideas about how the world should work onto a world that works differently, it's just, it's never going to work out for you. So really for the, and, you know, I think the argument should come from a place of just like American nationalism. But even if you wanted to make the argument on the case of like what's good for Jewish people, what's going on right now is not good for Jewish people. And they bet. And I've been saying this for a very long time. And I keep getting called an anti-Semite for being like, maybe Jews should chill out on the whole, let's destroy the lives of everybody opposing us. That's not a good way to ingratiate yourself with the population. But I'm an anti-Semite for saying so. We're going to be back on the other side. I've got to go to a quick commercial break, a couple minutes long. We'll be back with Austin Franco. He's my guest. Follow him on X at AustinFranco123 and on Instagram at Austin.Franco. The O in that is a zero instead of the letter O. We'll be back on the other side again to talk about the changing landscape of American culture and how we deal with a multicultural society. The answer is you got to let everybody have their say. You can't shut up white people just because we're white.
A microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation.
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder, and what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite, and once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live, the Alex Jones Network, AlexJonesLive.com. Of course, you support us by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com. Right now, you can get a free cooler with every order over $100. So if you spend $100 or more, you'll get a free cooler with your order. It's a very cool cooler, no pun intended. And of course, we have just incredible products. 50% off CMOS capsules, creatine powder, turmeric gummies, smelling salts, the War Cry smelling salts, extremely powerful, most powerful ones I've ever tried. 50% off all of those, 40% off many more of our products, and 30% off practically all of them. And this is the final week to enter to win both the 2026 Ram Laramie 2500 and the 2026 Ford Super Duty F-250, plus $20,000 in cash. For every $100 you spend, you get 10,000 entries to those drawings and a free cooler right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Go there and shop today, because as you may recognize, that despite all of the rhetoric of victory, cancel culture is still very much a real thing. And thank goodness Alex Jones figured out a long time ago how to keep us totally independent of everybody except for you, our audience, as long as we're fulfilling your requirement of telling the truth and bringing you the stories that are important to you. Then we hope you go and support us at thealexjonesstore.com. That way, we don't have anybody else bothering us about what we cover, how we cover it. We don't care about who thinks what we're doing is wrong or bad or we should stop. We're going to keep telling the truth no matter what, as long as you support us at thealexjonesstore.com. And again, this is just as important as it was when we got kicked off the internet in 2018, because without the store, without your support, we go away. It's as simple as that. We are a capitalist endeavor at the end of the day, and we bring you the best possible supplements, products. Everything is amazing. TheAlexJonesStore.com. My guest is a victim of cancel culture. Well, an attempted victim of cancel culture, I guess. Do you feel as though you've been canceled, Austin? I've always felt as though canceling required the participation of the person being canceled. I've always thought it was funny when people are like, wasn't that person canceled? And it's like, what does that even mean? That doesn't even mean anything. It just means people were mad at him, I guess. But you clearly have not been canceled. You're on this show. You're increasing your social media presence. Do you feel as though you've been canceled, or have you withstood the canceling, Austin?
I think the overwhelming support that I received kind of was the final nail in the coffin for cancel culture. I don't think it's going to work anymore, to be honest.
Well, and it's amazing because this is sort of like this, your gamble has paid off. Because it seems like, I mean, essentially you looked around at the landscape, the cultural landscape, and you sort of thought, you know, if I say this, I could get in trouble, but I think we've moved far enough that I'm actually going to get a lot of support. And then you made the statement, and sure enough, they went public with it. They tried to destroy your life, and you've gotten a lot of, you know, support since then, but that hasn't stopped them from trying various methods of destroying your life, yeah, including luring you to this undercover sting with, what is it called, Accuracy in Media, I think is the organization. How did this come about? And I saw you post a little bit about how they sort of dangled the carrot for you. They sort of said, oh, we want to help you. We think what happened was terrible. Just come talk to us and we'll give you money. I mean, how did that work out? How did they lure you to this conversation in the first place?
Yeah, so I got like a letter in the mail from Hope Parker, and I was like, okay, they're offering money. Might as well go check it out. So on my birthday, July 1st, I went over to go see her at this restaurant area. It was like this little pavilion, and we were outside. She had her laptop out, and she was like, I just went on this conversation for about, I don't know, it was 20 minutes or so. And they cut a lot of it out, but, I was skeptical during the interview, and I mentioned that, you know, I don't want to say too much or say something that could be deemed a hate speech or something that could actually get me kicked out of Cornell. So I was a little bit skeptical during the interview of what was going on, but they kind of lured me in, you know, going back to your question with the 5K, being like, we want to help you. We'll provide jobs. They actually asked during the interview, like, what I was specifically looking to go into. I said I was looking to go into consulting and politics. I think those were the two I mentioned. I'd have to get the audio recording. If we go to litigation and discovery with Free Expression Foundation, that's probably, hopefully, when we can release the full audio recording, if we can get that on our hands.
So do you have a lawsuit that you're filing against them?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, the Free Expression Foundation actually sent out a demand letter. You can go find it on X, and it's $7,500 in damages, like, per the law, and then I think $50,000 in punitive damages, but that's just the demand letter. So hopefully, as we venture into discovery and maybe litigation, we can hopefully reveal more information to the public, either when the lawsuit is ongoing or after the lawsuit.
Well, I think that's great. Are you fundraising for that, or can people contribute to that effort?
Free Expression Foundation actually gets donors, so they were willing to do it pro bono, so which is very generous of them, to be honest.
Which, again, look, if you're a Jewish person and you're trying to hire somebody and they say, I don't want to work for a Jew, just don't hire them. Like, what's the big deal? It's like, okay, you don't want that person, don't hire them, no big deal. It's the overwhelming response. It's the Joe Lonsdale, we have to get fear, you know, strike, yeah, fear in their hearts. It's the fact you've got, like, Leo Terrell, who's a official government, you know, in a government position as anti-Semitism czar or whatever he does, some position that shouldn't exist in the first place, but it does exist. And he's like, this person should be never hired for anything ever. In other words, your life should be taken. You should be relegated. Like, really, you should be in prison for the rest of your life for daring to suggest merely that you personally don't want to work for Jews. That, again, the overwhelming response doesn't make any sense. It's totally incoherent and obviously backfiring. But that alone, Leo Terrell, and we've seen the DOJ, I mean, they went after the girl who, you know, threw a drink on the IDF guy in that university in Florida. I mean, they had the Florida, they had the university locked down. They got her kicked out of school. They want to destroy her life. It's the destroying the life over mere disagreement that is so objectionable to an American. So again, it's not even, you don't even have to agree with what Austin Franco said. And I literally don't feel one way or another about it. I don't care. Literally, you don't want to work for Jews, don't work for Jews. Who cares? But if you're, you know, all upset about this, what makes it such a big deal? Why are they so desperate to destroy your life? And how did you feel about Leo Terrell, this government figure, saying you should never be hired for any by anybody ever? How did you take that?
To be honest, it's hard to take these people seriously. I kind of see it like a clown show. You know, who has the biggest red nose? I mean, it's just so ridiculous. Like, you're looking at these people. You have full grown adults here telling a 19-year-old kid, we're going to make you unemployed. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, you kind of have to laugh at it. And it's the same thing with Piers Morgan. I was like, you know, I went on there. I was like, okay, this will be interesting. But it was like, you're just going to sit here. I don't know how old you are, right? I don't know. What is he, 60, 50, whatever, right? And you're telling me, I'm like 40 years younger than you. Oh, you're such a bad guy. Like, come on. Like, for saying you don't want to work for a Jew. Like, it's just, it's so ridiculous. And you literally just look at these people like they're clowns. It's like, what are you going to do? You're going to kill me? Like, okay. I'm just dead. Like, there's not much you can do there. And it's funny. It really is. It's just like a big comedy.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's very silly. But I mean, obviously they do still have power. And that's the other thing is like,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
Leo Terrell, he's an official government figure saying this crap. Joe Lonsdale, head of Palantir, with the way Palantir is being incorporated into our government system. I don't want these people with this level of like hyper paranoia and ethnic in-group like vengeance on their minds. Like, why? Like, that, not that they're Jewish, but that they have this mindset is so poisonous. Leo Terrell, he's a black guy, but like still, this mindset is so poisonous, so destructive. They've got to abandon it. And I think your case does a lot to expose how truly silly all of this is.
Yeah. It's really pathetic, to be honest. You would think the people in power would be a little bit more mature when it comes to these things, but I mean, clearly they're not. So.
Well, they're hypocrites too, because at the same time, what was going on with you, it's like you had some of the same, like you had Gabe Einhorn responding to people going, oh, you want to work for a Jew?
Yep.
Excellent. I'll hire you. It's like, well, what the hell?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a total double standard. It's total hypocrisy, but it just doesn't matter, I guess. I guess they just don't see it. They don't care.
No, it's whatever, right? You know? Yeah.
No, it is utterly wild. I mean, again, Palantir, like, what is your take on Palantir? How, like, do you think these, cause clearly they recognize, okay, you know, the culture is moving away from us, but they're clearly not moderating their extremism in any way. It's like, where do you think this goes from here? Do you think these people are going to like solidify their power and, you know, wreak vengeance, or are they going to have to chill out a little bit? I mean, what is the path forward here?
I mean, it's possible. It depends on how much power they actually have. You know, if they had a bunch of hard power, like say in the Soviet Union with the Stasis, yeah, they could just send you to the gulags or kill you. I don't think they have that level of power yet. It's certainly possible they do. They may in, you know, a year or two, but I think right now they do have to appeal to the culture, at least until they can garner enough power where they can just, you know, kill off their enemies or just be completely violent if they want to. You know, there comes a point where you don't need to care for public opinion, but I don't think we're at that point yet.
Well, but they'll find ways to make you pay. Obviously,
yes.
You've been kicked out of your house. Can you describe that? Well, and let's clarify something, because I just saw a headline today that you think 5G is, well, let me correct myself. You're aware of the effects of 5G on the human brain, and that has something to do with you getting kicked out of the house. Obviously, this is InfoWars. This is the Alex Jones Network. We are perfectly aware of the effects of 5G and the possibility of manipulation through the 5G network. So I don't even question that, but I do question the reporting and whether it was just made to try to discredit you as a schizo conspiracy theorist, because people don't know about 5G. But what is the truth of that? Can you give us the background of what that headline's about?
Yeah, so I signed a lease after I got kicked out of my parents' house for an apartment up in Ithaca, New York. And I arrived there and I saw this, like, it was this diamond-shaped panel. And I was like, you know, that looks awfully familiar. to similar to something like a 5G tower. So it was up on the roof, and I climbed out my window onto the roof and the panels. And I looked behind it, right? And there it says it's like 5 gigahertz. It's got all the details and everything. Granted, it was, you know, an older model, but it was running on the 5G gigahertz network or frequency. And I took out my EMF reader, my tri-field EMF reader, and this thing was off the charts. So it was originally at like 2, which is, it's like, what is it, 2? It's like 100 or 10 times more than the recommended frequency on the paper they supply when you buy the tri-field meter.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, when I was at home, when my parents were away on vacation, I wrapped our Wi-Fi router in tinfoil. And I know this is like probably like, oh my God, this is very
normal.
It, like,
don't, yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So I was doing it because I wanted to have more vivid dreams. And after I put the tinfoil on, I was having these like amazing dreams. It was really great. It was far enough away that it wasn't impacting me metabolically or anything. And then we took it away and I no longer had any dreams. So I was like, okay, let's take the tinfoil going back to the apartment. Cause I was at my house originally. This is where the dream stuff and the Wi-Fi router, but going back to the apartment, I was like, okay, let's wrap this thing up in tinfoil. And so that's what I did. And then I had my EMF reader in hand and this thing spiked up to 11. And I like started getting like throbbing in my head. And I was like, okay, this isn't working. We should probably just move out. I don't want to be around this thing anyway. So I moved to another apartment in town. It was a little bit cheaper and, you know, moved out within the day. I actually stayed at a hotel overnight, just to get away from the frequency. So I know it's kind of crazy, but,
but it's really not. And I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you know, there's like stories of, you know, an elementary school right by a cell phone tower where like 50% of the kids get brain cancer. This stuff is not safe and you should be aware of it.
No, it's not.
Yeah. And, and like we recently stayed in a house that had just for some reason, just like very thick plaster walls and like very thick wooden roof. It was like this old, like old wood that doesn't even exist anymore. That's super thick that actually stops the signal. And I mean, literally you walk in there and it like feels, do you feel like something has been like the white noise that's constantly present is finally turned down. You're like, whoa, silence.
You can feel it. Like this ringing in your head. Yeah.
You go into a Faraday cage and you're like, oh my goodness, it's quiet again. Absolutely. I totally get that. But of course, how did they find out about that? How did the newspapers find out about that? And of course they twisted into you were blaming 5G for scrambling your brain. And so they kicked you out because you're crazy. Obviously that's not the right story. But how they found out about this?
I posted on X.
Oh, okay.
So I posted on X, the tri-field meter and then the 5G array too. So.
It's a real deal. You know, people really know this.
Yeah.
But obviously they sort of tried to blame that for you getting kicked out of your house. But so was it people bothering your parents and they were like, we just don't want to put up with this? Did they find, cause I feel like I'm in scandal sometimes. My family has no idea. I mean, cause they're not on X and stuff. They're not following it. They don't know what the hell's going on. Why were your parents even aware of this? I guess once it went national, they would have found out. But can you just talk through sort of what happened with your parents? Because I find this to be extremely tragic.
Well, I mean, they have Jewish friends and, you know, family members who are online all the time who are telling them about it. And then, you know, my dad works for a law firm that has a lot of Jewish people in it. And, you know, he gets along with them well. He has no problems with them. He's not anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish in any capacity. Neither of my parents are. You know, these are my beliefs, no one else's. You know, you just kind of diverge over time, but our political beliefs and, you know, beliefs on race and all that. But they kind of just found out through other people. And then they saw the Piers Morgan stuff through other people as well, texting saying, hey, did you, you know, see your son was on Piers Morgan or do you see your son on X? He posted this. And then they would also hear from work as well saying, okay, we got to take your page down. Or, you know, my mom's boss had to talk to her about what was happening. So really just through other people. Otherwise, I think they would have, you know, kind of just carried on with their lives if it wasn't so viral.
And that's part of the pressure campaign, right? I mean, that's not all natural. Like you've got people probably calling their work and saying, hey, you know, you have this. And so it's like they didn't say anything. What you said wasn't even objectionable, but like, this is how far the like guilt by association goes that it's like, they will try to get your parents fired because you said, I don't want to work for Jews. Again, that's what this is all about. I don't want to work for Jews. Thanks. Like, again, what is the big deal? how is this worth like break? And hopefully you haven't broken communications with them. And I genuinely think like, you know, relationship with your parents is more valuable and important than any political stuff. But at the same time,
absolutely,
you know, the onus is on them, you know, kicking out their own son for doing this. I think that's a kind of shameful thing. Have you talked to them? Have you tried to educate them perhaps on why you hold the views that you hold? Have you gone down that hole at all?
Well, yes. You know, I don't know if I should share this.
We don't have to get into the details. I just, you know, it to me, my perspective, if I'm like got all these people coming at me, I'm not thinking like, oh my God, my son is so bad. I'm thinking like, what the hell's going on here? Like, this is not an appropriate response.
Well, yeah. So to put this into perspective, just so people know, like my parents, there's a Holocaust museum in DC. Took me to the Holocaust Museum last Thanksgiving, cause they were kind of fed up with my views.
Okay.
And then they brought me there. It didn't go so well. So I'm not going to say what happened, but you know, it didn't go so well. They were not happy. So, you know,
it didn't
they
work,
actually
huh?
kicked me out then too.
Oh my goodness.
So, but I think to put this into perspective, like they're not at all anti-Semitic. Like, you know, obviously, why would they take me to the Holocaust Museum if they're anti-Semites? Right. That doesn't make much sense. Right. So, but.
Wow. Yeah. But it's a vector to punish you. So, you know, the people, if they can't pressure you, then they'll try to pressure your parents. And, you know, it's up to them to recognize and see what's actually going on here. But like, I'm the same way. I have a lot of Jewish friends. Everything I say on the air, I would say directly to their faces, including things like, hey, man, young people are not going to want to be working for you when your like entire ethnicity is inextricably tied to like a genocide going on and all this crazy stuff happening for their benefit. Again, they need to change their tactics, but that never seems to go over well. Those conversations never seem to go over well. But again, the response from the government, I mean, do you know, has there been any action by the government in terms of stopping you from getting a job or anything that you're aware of?
Not as of yet. Though I doubt most employers would touch me anyway, to be frank. Just after what happened. So, but I don't think they would have hired me anyway, just based on my skin color and me being male. So.
Well, there's that too, right? And that's the thing. I mean, 90% of jobs since COVID, it's like, oh, we're not going to hire you now because you're anti-Semitic, quote unquote. But it's like, well, you weren't going to hire me anyway because I'm a white Christian dude. So, you know, the discrimination is real, which again, it's like if we're going to, and this really is the thing, is older people don't understand that like you grew up as a minority. I grew up as a minority going to public school in Houston. It was not white people and then like a black guy and a Hispanic guy. It was like a third, a third, a third. So I don't have any you know, moral like, oh, the poor little black people. I'm like, no, it's like half the people in my school are black. I treat them like human beings like anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel the need to. It's almost an inverted white supremacy where white people go, oh, you can't talk about other races and we'll be fine. You don't worry about us. Don't concern yourself about the plight of white people. We'll always survive. We're white. And it's like, no, y'all, we are being discriminated against. We are being destroyed in a lot of ways. Yeah. We need to stand up for ourselves. So just as a, like, talk about that, just like being a young person growing up in this multicultural world that demonizes white people. This is a different world than older people know about or are aware of or grew up in. And they haven't seemed to update their own software to comply.
Yeah. They haven't gotten the DLC expansion pass.
Seriously.
Right?
Seriously.
Yeah. You know, listen, I think every other group, you know, Jews, Indians, blacks, they all have in-group preferences. So this idea of a merit-based society really falls out the window when you have one group, specifically whites, who won't have an in-group preference. They're like, oh, we need to treat everyone equally, right? But then you have Indians who will just simply hire Indians because they're Indian, mm-hmm. right? You have blacks will do the same. You have Jews that will do the same. Asians will do the same, right?
Right.
So it's becoming increasingly difficult for white people to find and, you know, get into positions of power because they're the only one treating everyone as an individual. They'll hire the Indian because, you know, he's the best one,
right.
You know, just hypothetically speaking, right? Not saying that's actually the case, right? And then that Indian gets into power and he's like, well, I'm not going to hire the white person. I'm going to hire the Indian person.
Yeah.
So you eventually get to a point where you just have no white people in positions of power. And that's what we're seeing now. Like the whole DEI thing. I was like, this is not going to go away. I was telling an Asian friend I have here at Cornell. And I was like, even if they get rid of it, these traits, these biological traits and these preferences are already embedded in the management structures. It doesn't matter if you remove the program now. The cat is out of the box. The you know, white HR lady, the lesbian HR lady is going to hire, you know, another lesbian HR lady, or the Indian HR lady is going to hire an Indian, right? It doesn't matter at this point. There's no way you get out of this other than a complete cleaning of the slate, in the sense that you return to a meritocracy where you just have one group. Like if you just have white people, for instance, in America, not saying, you know, this is what we should aspire to or anything, but if you just have white people, there's no in-group preference. Like the Germans are not going to discriminate against the French or the English, right? Well, I mean, they might, you know, given 100 years or so when, you know, it's all white people, but that's besides the point, right? But the Asians will discriminate against the whites. The Indians will discriminate against the whites and vice versa. So you need to have a homogenous society if you want a meritocracy. Otherwise, you're going to have in-group preferences take place. And that's fundamentally why we don't have that anymore. We just have, you know, people hiring their own kin because they prefer their own kin. So you just have to look at the biological realities and say, okay, over the long term, how is this going to play out?
100%. And again, the ultimate hypocrisy of all of this is, at the same time, the outrage about your tweet or your statement came out. Gabe Einhorn is literally, you know, going, yeah, oh, you want to work for Jews? Great. We'll hire you. It's like, then what's the big deal? And to expect white people, especially young white people growing up now, not a majority, not in power, not, they don't turn on TV and see nothing but white people. They're growing up as, really, in a lot of cases, despised minorities, and they're being told, mm-hmm, but you're not allowed to say anything about it or have in-group preference. It's intolerable and it's unfair. It just simply is unfair.
Exactly.
And people aren't going to stand for it, and we shouldn't stand for it because it's unfair. And if we're going to have a multicultural society, then it's going to have to be genuinely multicultural, not every culture except for yours, which happens to be the founding culture and the culture that everybody else is supposed to assimilate to. So what's your next plan? You're still going to school. What's next for you, and how can people follow you and support you as you go along?
Yeah. I mean, support wise, I think, you know, following me is good. I could conceivably start a podcast, so I don't know how good I would be at that. But I'm hoping to go into politics later in my life, you know, make some tangible change for the people of this country. You know, if you like what I say and you know, think I'm well spoken, just reach out to, I try to answer as many DMs as possible. You know, try to be a voice for the people. So.
Well, you're a very brave young man, and very stalwart in resisting all this pressure. So I think what you're doing is very powerful, and, you know, represents a very interesting new paradigm that everybody better get used to, because it's not going anywhere. Certainly not with all the anti-white hate that we see coming down the pipe. Young people are not going to put up with it. Increasingly so. Incredible stuff. Austin Franco, follow him on X at AustinFranco123, on Instagram, Austin.Franco with a 0 and 7 O. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We'll be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the shit and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now and get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. War Room Live, third hour is on. Still have a lot more to cover today, a lot of videos to show you. I want to go now, and this is sort of in context of what we were just talking about, the world order established after World War II that we see crumbling all around us. This topic was covered by Daryl Cooper on the Tucker Carlson podcast. He laid it out rather well. Here he is from the Tucker Carlson appearance last week. Let's watch.
When you say the Nuremberg system, what does that mean?
It means, well, there's a lot of elements to it having to do with geopolitics and warfare. But from the standpoint that we're talking about right now, you know, it's this idea that for people to live historically in the sense that I just described it is something that is dangerous and to be targeted and broken down. And you saw this really on domestic social levels. I mean, you see it. I mean, it's not as if that left-wing government in Spain is not part of the problem. You know,
they're definitely
clearly are. But here in the United States, you know, you saw the effects of it over the course of the second half of the 20th century where, you know, you had our cities back in the day that were sort of these organic communities with, separate neighborhoods divided by ethnicity and religion that, were not in conflict with one another. They had arrived at compromises over the years and ran their cities in an organic way. And people were part of, you know, they were plugged into communities that watched them be born and that would watch them die and that their kids would grow up in and know that their kids were going to grow up in. And they sensed themselves as these people. You know, they understood themselves as part of this living community that was going to continue on afterwards. So it was important for them to, make sure that the things they inherited were given to the people that, that came along after their period of stewardship. And, over the course of the second half of the 20th century, I mean, it was official U.S. government policy essentially to use mass migration generally of African Americans from the South as bludgeon weapons to go in and break these communities up and drive these people out to the suburbs, drive them out to other areas where, you know, that old parish church that used to be all, you know, Italian Catholics, you go drive through there now in Newark and it's maybe some old grandmas who are still there, but everybody else lives 45 minutes away now. So nobody goes there anymore. And all of those communities were broken up by force very often and through violence indirectly, on purpose. And it was because they were looked at as something that was potentially, you know, that when people are living in a way where they sense themselves as part of a larger project, the idea after World War II was that that can and in fact will almost inevitably get out of hand. And
get out of hand in what way?
Well, the way that the Germans got out of hand. I mean, that's, you know, the idea that they start taking themselves too seriously and thinking of their historical mission too seriously, and they start to act on it in the world in a way that is dangerous to others. That was the idea, right? And of course, there's only one group, at least in the Western world, that we decided that doesn't apply to, and it's because they were the ones who were the victims of the Germans. So the Israelis, the Jewish people in general, very much live historically, and their right to do that and ability to do that is, you could say it's the central and primary, certainly, foreign policy, but even with a lot of domestic policies, mission of the U.S. government and the sort of Western European NATO system in general. It's a central focus of that, which is very strange when you think about it, until you realize that we're living in the aftermath of of Nuremberg. We're living in the aftermath of the Second World War, and we're probably coming up to the end of that cycle right now. I think that we're reaching the point where everybody who was around back then is gone. People who remember it directly and who have the real enthusiasm for it that was born out of direct experience, is probably fading away. That seems to be the historical cycle every 80 to 100 years,
Very interesting stuff. Living historically, in other words, seeing your place in history and your role in it as a positive good that should be continued and even expanded, that's only reserved for certain people. That is, everybody who's not a white Christian person. Make your own conclusions from that. We'll get back on the other side and talk about all the other groups trying to take over in not very subtle ways. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Lee has launched an online pharmacy, 1776rx.health. It's one product we're launching with, my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine, and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776rx.health.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I hope you can support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. We make it easy for you to do so. I've got a lot, like too much. Like, I just, at a certain point, I can only get to so much in a single day. I'm going to have to save so much of this for tomorrow. And I've got videos. I've got articles. I could just spend this last hour strictly reading headlines. That's how much news I have. I think maybe I'll save some of the coverage of, well, maybe for balance. Maybe it'd be a good thing now for balance to talk about the DSA. Once again, I had a little bit of trouble today dividing my stories into categories because there's so much overlap. There's so much fuzziness between the topics. In other words, I want to talk about the takeover of the socialist DSA, but also incumbent with that, coming along with that, powering a lot of that, is the Muslim takeover, the immigrant takeover, but specifically Muslims, the case of Zoran Mamdani, of course, being a major one. I have a ton of videos that expose, the real motive behind these people. So I think maybe we'll talk about that. As if we needed them to admit it, the story's at alexjoneslive.com. We're here to destroy the white race. Democratic Socialists of America I almost said war hero. He's never been to war. What are you talking about? DSA hero declares war on West. Marxist streamer Hassan Piker has emerged as an incredibly visible, if unofficial, spokesman for the DSA's rapidly expanding political action network. He campaigned for Michigan Democrat candidate Abul El Sayed and Wisconsin gubernatorial candidate Francesca Hong, while cultivating close ties to socialist New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani. From an electoral risk perspective, Piker is becoming a liability for Democrats. His far-left anti-American rhetoric provides Republicans with what we called a gift last week. Even Hillary Clinton warned on Friday that the GOP's anti-communist messaging is very effective. Hillary Clinton saying it's not just about Michigan, but the Republican messaging is communist socialist. It's going to be a very effective attack. Okay, but what about the anti-white stuff? Can we talk about this? Can we discuss the fact that multiple popular left-wing so-called socialist communist agitators are just literally foreign invaders who are open about their desire to literally rape and kill white people as a policy? As a policy? Can we talk about that a little bit? I'm a little bit more concerned with that than anything else. And again, I got so many videos on this topic in particular. that it's, I'm gonna have to judge here exactly what to do. Let's go clip number seven first. This is Hassan Piker making quote unquote inflammatory remarks about immigration, capitalism, Hezbollah, and Islamophobia. Here's DSA spokesman, whatever his name is, Hassan Piker, just saying what every Democrat believes in their heart of hearts. Let's watch.
We're going to keep bringing in immigrants into this country on even your daughter. We're going to destroy the white race, bitch. That's what we're here to do.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Oh, amazing. That's so surprising to me. You're telling me you're not here to help us? You're telling me that, you know, white America wasn't choking on its own whiteness before you arrived here to rescue us from our own whiteness? We're going to keep bringing immigrants so they can abuse your daughter and destroy you. Okay. Again, why do we even have to argue with it? Like, if our government was even remotely responsible, the dude would be expelled from our country. He'd be sent back to Turkey, and he'd love it. He'd love it there. But then, of course, and this is what I think, like, in order to truly understand and interact with the political sphere in an effective or reality-based way, you've got to understand who these people are, where they're coming from, and what they're doing. This is a struggle for specifically white people, specifically Christians, specifically boomer, white Christian boomers. You're just the perfect target for this type of deception because it can be so confusing if you take any of them at their words, any of their words. In other words, there's a, you know, he's on, it's like, I keep wanting to call him Mom Donnie. I keep getting all these people mixed up. Hassan Piker is on video right there talking about wanting to destroy the white race, bringing in immigrants on purpose in order to destroy the white race. And then when people call that out, he goes, lol, I'm white though. No, but I'm white though. So isn't this so funny? And this might be confusing because you're like, well, wait, I thought he hates white people. He wants to destroy white people, but he thinks he's white. Or maybe he's talking about he's white presenting. In other words, he gets white privilege because he's not black. So therefore, because the culture sees it, he's categorized, like in the government files, as quote unquote white. So therefore, it makes no sense to point out that he wants to kill white people. And when it, you know, you're in this mess and it's a tangled web we weave when we practice to deceive, when you're in the chaos and the maelstrom of all of these lies flying about, it's good to remember they don't believe anything that they say, and they're all perfectly fine with that. They don't believe it either, right? Because you can imagine a world in which any of them actually believe anything they say, in which case Hassan Piker saying, I'm white, I guess he'd go on the bad call. I guess he would then become a despised white person. Anything that he said that was good, it would have to be some sort of trick to trick you into white supremacy. But they don't have any consistency. They don't believe anything that they say, and they're all aware of this and perfectly fine with it. You really need to understand that, like, nothing they say means anything at the end of the day. Like, really, honestly, I'm not even exaggerating. I'm not being hyperbolic. Nothing they say means anything. They're motivated entirely by seething hatred and jealousy of people they aren't, and they just want to destroy it. And they'll say whatever it takes to do that, to achieve that. That's it. It's pretty simple. Actually, you could ignore everything that they say. Because again, if you look at, somebody like Hassan Piker saying, but I'm white though, it's like, well, what? What does he mean? What he means is, I don't care about your criticisms. I don't care. I'm a hypocrite. I don't care about any of this. I'm here to destroy you. Like, that's a, just hear the translation in your mind, because that's what it actually means. And there's evidence. I'm not just saying this either. There's obviously very pertinent evidence for all of this. Let's go to clip number six here. This is Abdul al-Sayed rejecting Hassan Piker. Now, remember what I just said. So as you listen to Abu al-Sayed you know, attempt to differentiate himself from Hassan Piker. Remember, he's lying. Hassan Piker's lying. They're all lying. They know they're lying. They're happy to lie. Again, I'll show you more evidence of this in just a second, but here's Abu al-Sayed, or whatever, guy who just won his primary, attempting to create some distance between himself and Hassan Piker in an entirely fabricated and made up and falsified way. Let's watch.
So again, I'm a lot more focused on who I'm campaigning to rather than who I might campaign with.
When asked about Hassan Piker's comments on 9/11, Senator Bernie Sanders called it a dumb statement. Do you agree? Do you disavow those comments that America deserved 9/11?
Of course. Of course it was a dumb statement. And of course, I think Hassan himself would say that was a dumb statement. He disavowed it. So yes, America didn't deserve 9/11. But, you know, to sit here and play gotcha politics with a dumb thing somebody said out of context that they disavowed themselves to say, oh, well, what does that mean about what you think? I want to be held accountable for what I say and what I do, rather than this idea that we're so stuck in cancel culture that yeah. All of us agreed was a bad idea back in 2020, but we seem to want to bring back.
We are out of time, but I have to ask you before I let you go, if you win, you will be the.
Yeah, well, you know, we all hated cancel culture back then. You know, this Abu al-Sayed guy, I'm sure he was right there with us in 2020 calling for free speech, defending people who are getting fired for saying the N-word, right? Because we all understand free speech. Like, it's just, it is so depressing knowing how many people are going to fall for this. Like, that at the end of the day is my takeaway. It's just knowing that there are people that are just like, but he said he rejected it. And again, the sort of casualness, like, I don't know why I'm being held to some statement that even the guy himself, said he did. The man said America deserves 9/11. And he said it multiple times. And saying that wasn't a smart thing to say is not actually disavowing the thing that was said. You're just saying you should keep it secret. It's almost like they can't even help be like, well, it's fine to believe that, but you shouldn't say it. It's like, this is why you're a bad person that should never be given any sort of power in our government ever. Ever. Just like Zoran Mamdani. And they're like clones of each other, and they're all completely full of crap. Let's go to clip 32 here. This is Zoran Mamdani in a suspiciously thick accent talking about basically using identity to get elected by progressives despite not being progressives. Let's watch.
I think that with the interesting thing about our communities here is I think that minority communities, because we have never had representation, we are tied much more to identity. White communities, they've had representation forever. And so for them, their tie is a little less identity and a little more ideology. And so what I mean by that is we have a lot of voters here who think of themselves first as progressive voters. And mm-hmm. So we reach out to them speaking about our platform, our progressive platform. And you're very right that you need someone in the middle to be a validator, someone to tell them to trust us, believe in us. We've had that with Tiffany Caban and Cynthia Nixon.
We need somebody to cover for us. We need somebody to convince the progressives that we're on their side so we can infiltrate and gain power. That's what I heard. I'm not sure what you heard, but I don't know if this needs to be said, but, Muslims, not exactly progressive. In fact, deeply, and I won't even say conservative because it's not American conservative. They aren't, you know, doing anything to conserve actual American foundational morals or people or anything, but they do want to keep their women in trash bags, and they do think rape is, quote unquote, a spectrum. We'll get to that clip in just a second. But let's first see a example of taqiya, sort of the Islamic version of some other things that exist out there in the world. It's, in other words, it's just saying you can lie. You know, lying is bad. It's a sin unless it's in service of gaining power for Muslims, in which case it's incumbent on you to perform taqiya. Let's go to clip 38 here. This is sort of behind the scenes leaked video of Abdul al-Sayed setting up a shot for a video he's putting out. Here he is talking about the set decoration. Let's watch.
What are the other one?
You're going to want to not get these things in the shot.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we can.
Try to keep the shot secular.
Is that not... Do you see what... Did you hear what he just said? Do you understand what was just said on camera? We want to keep the shot secular, so don't show the Qurans that we have on our bookshelf. Straight up talk, yet. Straight up, if people knew that we were Muslim extremists, if they knew that we were religiously committed to this conquering religion, then they probably wouldn't vote for us. So we want to be perceived as secular. We want to be perceived as religious moderates. So we better not show the evidence that we're not. We better not show the evidence of our religious adherence with all the Qurans that we have displayed. You're going to want to not get these things, the Qurans in the shot. Try to keep the shot secular. That's Abul al-Sayed in 2018. Again, just like the one of the most blatant examples you could ever hope for what Takiyah looks like and how it's expressed. That they know that if you knew what they were really like, you'd never vote for them. So they see it as a moral imperative to pretend to be something they're not, to trick you into voting for them. If we had an informed and intelligent and reasonable voting base, that would be enough. And this is one of those things, because I do this with just about everything I want to talk about. I first think, what if it was the other way around? What if it was the other way around? I would also not trust a Christian who says, you better not film the Bible. We want to keep this shot secular. I wouldn't like that either. I wouldn't trust that either. Not sure it would ever happen unless you were a liberal. Like, we might have different reasons for this, right? The Muslims are like, well, I guess it's kind of the same thing. Like, if you had a Christian person that was like, don't show the cross on the wall because I'm trying to get elected by liberals and they hate Christians, I'd be like, you shouldn't trust that person. You shouldn't trust that person. If they're willing to hide their religious conviction for the sake of getting elected, they're untrustworthy and shouldn't be elected on that basis alone. So this isn't even necessary. Like, again, some things you can point to and you can go, well, you don't like it when they do it. You do like it when you do it. Even that, I think, doesn't necessarily mean hypocrisy. There are some things I want us to do that I don't want other people to do. That's fine. In this case, this criticism is very, like, pure and easy to understand. And anybody who's electing any official should not be okay with that official lying to their faces or setting up a shot to disguise their, you know, actual religion or religious motivations. But people keep falling for these. They keep falling for these people. And just like that Zoran Mamdani clip that we just played, it's because both sides align only and exclusively on their desire to destroy white people. And they both just agree with that. And that's really all they agree with. And that's what is motivating them, obviously. Let's go to another one of these videos. I mean, we have like so many videos of this. The Abu al-Sayed, who's trying to get elected in, I believe, Wisconsin, is caught on hot mic talking about how much he hates literally the most like American and traditional part of his state. Let's go to clip 22 here. This is Abu al-Sayed talking about Oklahoma Sharia law and the ban that Oklahoma put on Sharia law. Let's watch clip 22.
Bismillah wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa ashabihi ajma'in. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Question 755. When the state of Oklahoma voted in a referendum to amend the constitution to ban Sharia law, what does that mean? I don't know. And yet the voters banned it anyway. And I don't have to tell you that the same exact forces that drove native peoples from their land 2 centuries ago, destroyed Black Wall Street 1 century ago, bombed a building decades ago, and tried to ban Sharia law not a decade ago, that those forces are alive and well today.
Yeah, white Christian people are alive and well. That's true. That is true. And it's a problem he seeks to solve. Al-Sayed campaign, backed by over $100,000 from dozens of members of group with alleged terror ties. Fox News Digital identified at least 41 donors linked to the group named the Holy Land Foundation case. But again, it's one of these things where it's like, he's like, I don't even know what that means, banning Sharia law, but I'm deeply against it, and it's evidence of why white people need to be destroyed. If it's not that big of a deal, if you don't even know what it means, if it's not that big of a threat, then who cares about banning it? It obviously is something that they're interested in imposing. They obviously don't like that it's banned. And that, I think, is enough for you to know that it should be, and that we should be aggressively opposing this. And again, he ties in because, you know, white people are, you know, just white people are evil, and every other race. And, you know, the problem is there's not a lot of examples of white people coming into contact with other races and losing. So therefore, anytime white people came in contact with another race and there was some sort of war carried out there, the white people won, and so therefore can be portrayed as evil. Obviously, Islam is a conquering religion whose entire history has been the conquering and subjugation of other people groups by the sword. From the time when the Prophet was alive until now, it has done nothing but conquer people. Now, they're not as good at it as white people, but white people are also were never motivated by what Islam is motivated by, abject submission to them, so that the people being colonized can be, you know, exploited and then eradicated and destroyed and replaced with your type of people. That's never how colonialism ever worked in the world history. And the one place you could point to would be somewhere like South America, which is extremely complicated. Just like Black Wall Street being destroyed is absolutely nothing like the way that it's being portrayed, and not even remotely. But this is the thing. It's all blood libel. It's all blood libel piled upon blood libel. Black Wall Street was a black guy getting arrested for assaulting a white girl, a bunch of black guys showing up to try to break him out of prison, shooting at white people. They shot first, and then the white people responding in kind. It was a race riot, like any other race riot. Yet the way it's being portrayed now is as if a bunch of white people, for no reason, just decided to burn down a black neighborhood one day, other than an extremely complicated and nuanced conflict between two groups, both of whom have guilt on their side for starting the conflict in the first place. Same thing I would say with the Native Americans. It was never, you know, when the pilgrims first arrived on the coast of New England, they didn't bring an army, right? They didn't bring people to wipe out a people group. They brought settlers and farmers. And yes, it's absolutely tragic, and I abhor what happened to the Native Americans. I genuinely do. However, I understand that both groups can take blame in the way things proceeded. It's all a little bit more nuanced, but not to the Muslim practicing takia to trick progressives into opening the gate for them. Let's go to clip number 36 here. This is Abu al-Sayed on Hot Mic talking about how much he hates Mackinac Island and hates every visit there. Let's watch.
Please watch your stuff.
Oh, I hate Mackinac so much. It's funny because, like, if we win, this is going to be the, like,
summer home.
I'm just going to be like, every time I've ever come here, I've hated it. Why am I here?
I mean, there's so many things about it. For one thing, imagine running for office in a place and just being like, I hate a large portion of this state. You know, a large portion of the state, I hate it. I hate every time I've been there, which would be absurd enough as it is. But literally just the video itself, they're walking down what looks like paradise. You can hear the clopping of, you know, horses' hooves as a carriage goes by. It's like the most idyllic location you can possibly imagine. And these sewer dwellers are wandering through going, ugh, this is awful. This is just the worst. I hate this. Well, what do you hate? The flowers, the friendliness? Do you hate the low crime? Do you hate the prosperity? No, you hate the white people. You hate the white people and the American culture that's expressed by white people in this iconic and beautiful and historic little town. You absolute scumbag invaders.
my fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out of the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United Payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of it is information warfare and financial. And this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Talking about a topic that sort of pervades multiple categories of stories that we're getting into. In other words, you've got the rise of the DSA, the rise of communism, which along with it brings the Red-Green Alliance, the Islamist infiltrators that are clearly lying about their intentions, obviously and explicitly deceiving progressives and Americans into handing power over to them when they are in fact intending to impose things like Sharia law. Tied in with this, you've got AOC, obviously the first and most famous and prominent DSA acolyte in office. She's freezing her eggs at the age of 37, which is crazy. And we can get into that a little bit because she's simultaneously trying to claim that woke 1.0 never really existed and or it was bad that she wasn't a part of it. And it's just like everything they say are lies, like everything they say they don't believe, or they are genuinely insane people. That's the only other option, is they actually don't remember what happened in the last 10 years, which would be very disturbing. I mean, it's not true. They absolutely remember and they knew exactly what they were doing while they did it. But I guess what they want us to believe is that before, when they were advocating retarded stuff, it was just a big joke. We shouldn't have taken them seriously. But if we didn't, then they would destroy our lives. And now that they got what they wanted, we're not allowed to talk about how they got there. And then I also want to talk, and we'll see if we can. May have to save it for tomorrow. But over the weekend, some absolutely horrifying videos went viral on X out of North Carolina, where it seems as though, as much as anywhere, you know, more than anywhere else in the country, is where Irina Zarutska was murdered, you've got white people being targeted by deranged black criminals with rap sheets 50, 60, 100 cases long, constantly let out, constantly victimizing white people, specifically and exclusively, never punished for it. And then simultaneous to that, like, what I want to try to illustrate is the motivation of the anti-white hatred is all based on delusion. And I think it's pretty clear when you see all the evidence. And not just a delusion, but a deliberately fabricated lie about history, about the way the world works, about their own condition. And people are indulging in this delusion, not because they believe it, but because they use it as an excuse to destroy their enemies. I assume that that's why they're doing it. I assume they don't actually believe it, but I don't know. I genuinely don't know. So, like, there's so many. We'll get to that. I guess we'll get to that. Because I still got more to talk about. But let's just do it now for a moment. Let's go to clip 66 here. This is a Charlotte woman accused of ramming a police officer and a second man who was released on bond. Let's go to clip 66 here. This is just one of many, many examples of the law just not applying to black people for some reason in North Carolina. Let's watch.
Shit, boss, don't need no commentary.
Charges dismissed. That's her hitting the officer with her car. And it was absolutely dismissed. No problem with that, apparently. And it's not the only one, obviously. Far from it. We have a lot more videos of kind of this type of thing happening. Whether it's the just vicious attack. I don't even want to show you the attacks of the one guy who's literally going around hunting women, but I guess I probably should. Clip 43, Daquan Hunt arrested after allegedly live streaming assaults on white women, which seem to have given these women brain damage. And one of the reasons why I am covering this right now is because, as far as I can tell, up till now, not a single media outlet has reported on this. Not a single one. Not a national one. Maybe not even a local one. Not to any sufficient degree. And yet, it's like the top story on the weekend all across X. This guy literally hunting, chasing white women, attacking them, assaulting them, giving them brain damage, where you can see these women fall and hit their heads and their hands seize up, which is a clear, you know, sign of damage to the brain. And this just goes on, and he gets let out every single time. Every single time this happens. It is completely insane. And again, the numbers, I think, do we have that compilation there's a compilation of this, 35. Let's go to clip 35 here, or this one's just about the killing of the U.S. Marine. But my God, it really have so many of these. Heck, let's go to clip 33 here. Let's go to clip 33.
I spoke with a former SPD officer who arrested this suspect multiple times. I also talked to Georgia State Representative Jesse Petrie and Savannah Alderman Nick Palumbo. They're both shocked, disappointed, and extremely frustrated that this man has been in and out of jail over and over again, wondering why Doyle's seemingly falling through the cracks of the system. 30-year-old LaShawa Doyle is back behind bars, this time facing three felonies. He was arrested Thursday by Savannah police for attempting to rape a woman at the bathrooms in Daffin Park. City staff heard something, went and told an off-duty officer who was able to run over and stop the sexual assault. Alderman Nick Palumbo's district covers Daffin Park.
Time and time again, violated the trust of our community. And I would love to hear accountability from the judge. And I've asked from the district attorney's office their accountability mechanism to what is happening here.
Alderman Palumbo is also reaching out to Judge Claire Williams' office as she presided over most all of the misdemeanor charges Doyle has faced. Georgia State Representative Jesse Petrie also following our reporting of this crime.
Maddie, I was, appalled again to discover yet another recidivist criminal who has been, repeatedly in and out of our judicial system and repeatedly returned to the streets.
In addition to this attempted rape this week, Doyle's criminal history is fairly long. He just got out of jail 17 days ago. This is his eighth arrest in 2026 alone. It's his 22nd arrest since 2020. Two of those arrests this year, violent or sexually related. In June, he was arrested for pleasuring himself in front of SCAD's housing for the second time. In February, he bloodied a woman's face at a bus stop. In his last 15 arrests, he's been released on his own recognizance or released on time already served.
Housed or unhoused, mentally ill or no, this is a violent sex offender in our community, and people have a right to feel safe.
Representative Petrie told me as a legislator in Georgia, they've provided every opportunity for the judicial system to hold homeless people accountable for the crimes they or anyone else in the system commits. We'll have way more details in this article online tonight. Live in studio, Madeline Beerster, WTOC.
I mean, what are you even supposed to say? This is beyond incompetence. It's beyond tolerance. It's beyond anything. Eight arrests in a single year, and we're halfway through the year. Every single one of which, or at least the vast majority, are violent or sexually related. And they just keep letting him out. And mostly it's the same judge from Libs of TikTok. Man arrested for attempted rape at Georgia Park has 22 arrests since 2022, eight in 2026 alone, and was released from jail 17 days ago. Judge Claire Williams is the one who keeps releasing LaShawa Dole. We shouldn't have to live like this. What am I even supposed to say? If I get in a car accident and drive away without providing my insurance, I'm going to jail. I mean, there's no justification for it whatsoever. And these people are having their lives destroyed. In some cases, I mean, we don't even know. We don't even know because it never gets to trial because they just let the guy go. It's just like, what are we doing here? And genuinely, when is it going to be? I don't even want to say it, but like, it's astonishing. It really is astonishing to me that these judges do this so much because it is their fault. We have given the authority to our government to protect us from criminals. That's why we don't hang them in the square or just shoot them and bury them in the backyard, because we have a system that we rely on to keep us safe. If that system literally does nothing to these people, the system is no longer functional and should not exist. And the people abusing it like this are playing a very dangerous game. And I am frankly shocked it's gone on this long. Like, we only find out about this stuff when the stories go national because what they do is so egregious. But, like, the individual people have to be aware of this. So this is Doyle's arrest history in 2026 alone. He was arrested on charges of criminal attempt to commit a felony, aggravated sexual battery, false imprisonment, and public indecency at Daffin Park. That's the most recent one. So I'm sure he'll be out tomorrow for that. Like, that's wild. So arrest on criminal trespass, released 3 days later. Arrest on criminal trespass, released 3 days, 4 days later. Arrest on public indecency and criminal trespass outside SCAD housing after being caught by a SCAD student pleasuring himself in the middle of the road outside. This was a, you know, I'm just, this person should be thrown into the ocean. Like, that's it. He should be, he should have a millstone tied around his neck. He should be tossed in the water and the world would thank you. So what are we doing here? Again, what is this? I'm sorry I can't curse because, boy, I want to. But I'm going to lay out a few more of these just to, you know, really emphasize what's actually going on here, what we're actually dealing with, how we actually, what the reality is, because then I want to portray the absolute insanity that is behind all of this. Let's go to, there's one here. I mean, my God. My God, the number of things I have. Cause we'll relate this back. Let's go to clip 54 here. Oh, no. Okay. We're gonna get to that. Where's the 10 second one that's just the compilation? Clip 21 here. Claims that repeat offenders are released after literally hundreds of arrests. Let's go to clip 21 here. So the victim and the perpetrator here, and of course, the victim is always brutally either murdered or seriously injured. Always, or almost always, a white person, usually a white woman, and every single person, dozens of arrests. Dozens. Some of them over 100 arrests in their lives. Again, if this was happening in a, you know, racially equitable way, it would still be completely insane, but it is absurdly obvious. Yeah, 131 arrests. He lights a woman on fire. 131 arrests. One arrest should, like, ruin your life, honestly, especially if it's violent or sexual in nature. Like, we've got to start punishing these people effectively by torturing them in the town square. I honestly think we need to bring back physical punishment of one sort or another, because this is obviously unsustainable, and obviously being arrested is not a problem for them. Like, they don't care. But apparently neither do the authorities. Again, we can go on and on about this. But the reason it's happening, the reason it's happening this way, is because of the delusion of racism in America, which is so retarded. It really is hard to wrap your mind around. I really, because the crazy thing is, America used to be at least a little bit racist. America used to have laws where, you know, black people had to sit at the back of the bus. There's a time period where that happened. Even then, if you go back and watch interviews and listen to stories, there was not this seething hatred. There was not this hyperactive paranoia. Even at the time, the heights of the whatever racial violence ever existed in America, if you were to go back to, like, the birth of the KKK and all this stuff, you still didn't have the level of, like, paranoid, delusional, psychopathic madness that is currently driving the racial divide here. And once again, just to let's continue laying out the truth. Okay. First of all, we can lay out the absurd, you know, dichotomy of the way different types of people are treated by the American legal system when you know that Chud the Builder has finally been released from jail after 2 full months behind bars for defending himself when he was attacked because he said a naughty word. They forced him to take a $1 million bond, and he was in prison in absolutely brutal conditions for 2 months. More punishment than literal rapists or murderers get, despite being repeat offenders dozens of times over. Just a little example of some of the racial dichotomy at work legally. From Amiri King, in light of recent and constant black-on-white violence, I decided to create an updated homicide offender chart. What I found will shock you. You are 42 times more likely to be murdered by a black male aged 15 through 24 than a white male of any age, 42 times more likely. A black male child aged 5 to 14 is statistically more likely to kill you than a white man aged 35 through 64. Black males of any age are about 14 times more likely to be a murderer than white males of any age. The single highest rate in the entire table is black males 15 through 24 at 110.36 per 100,000. That's higher than the rate for Hispanic males of any age and dramatically higher than every white and female category. Even black males 65 plus still exceed the all ages white male rate. Hispanic males overall rate is about 3.6 times the white male rate, but still only about one quarter of the black male rate. Black females are roughly equal to white males overall, while white females are always the lowest at 0.66, head on a swivel always. And then he has this chart that goes by, you know, ages on one edge and race on the other. And, of course, you can do this also by, yeah, here's the actual image there. Which, again, now you factor in the story that we covered last week about how white people are constant, or rather non-white people are constantly being labeled white by our justice system, then I doubt these numbers are even real. I bet the white numbers are actually significantly lower, but like 50% of the people booked on murder are called white when they're not. So that's going to skew the numbers a little bit. Absolutely horrifying. But like it turns, like if you were to just isolate the white population in America, our crime rate is equivalent to Switzerland's. Just a little factoid for you there. Again, from Amiri King, another chart. This in response to the claim, the constant claim that's always made despite never, ever, ever having any evidence to it ever. From Oh My God Sidewalks, you reduce crime by eliminating poverty. The reason so-called nice neighborhoods have lower crime rate is because people's basic needs are being met. It's not nice because of police alarm systems or neighborhood associations. Poverty creates crime. Poverty creates crime is one of these sayings that just doesn't mean anything. It's just totally fake. It just does not apply to the statistics. If you actually look at the statistics, white people who make less than $10,000 have a murder rate of 7.2 per 100,000. Blacks who earn over 85,000 have double the murder rate. So yes, while you can see that like as you increase in income, the rate generally goes down, there's obviously something else at work here that has nothing to do, or is at least largely independent of, the income. It's not about poverty, and it never was. Okay, so now that we have the sort of layout of what we're actually talking about here, we're talking about a system who refuses to punish black people for committing crimes, hundreds of them, no punishment. You can literally try to run over a cop in your car, hit a cop with your car, and be out the next day as long as you're a black female. You've got just endless, vicious, violent, racially motivated attacks against white people. Horrifying ones on film, like the guy filmed himself doing it. That's how, you know, little he cares about justice or, you know, the threat of punishment. Going around live streaming, attacking white women, not covered by a single national newspaper. Not one of them decided to report on the actual news. They're busy fabricating nonsense about how white people are dangerous. So, again, what I'm trying to lay out is if there were to be a, you know, racial aspect of criminality or the justice system, it's clearly coming from one race and it ain't white people. But then you have people like this. This is a Tennessee state representative, a Tennessee congressman named Joe Towns. He writes, "Black people are being hung around the country because of Trump's rhetoric. Keep your gun with you and shoot on sight. Deal with the system later. However, stay live. It's time to start hanging those who are hanging you. Screw the rules. They don't work for you. Never have. You must F them up. No exceptions. Evil racist bitches. Save your own damn life and don't trust law enforcement." This is the delusion that's driving a lot of this. What the hell is he talking about? Nothing he said is anything other than a complete and total inversion of the truth. What the hell is he talking? Black people are being hung around the country? You want to point to a single one, buddy? You want to point to a single instance this has happened since the 1950s? So you tell me, this is what I was saying before. Does this guy believe this? Is he that stupid or insane, or is he lying to just gin up racial hatred in the black community? Which one's worse? I don't even know. Is it better that the black politicians are just making up stuff, blood libels against white people to try to encourage violence against them? Or is it better that the dude actually thinks it's real and is living in a state of abject and total delusion? Both are bad. I don't know if one's better exactly. But this is like everywhere. This is a perpetual state, unfortunately. Let's go to clip 21 here. Again, just complete absurdity. Oh, that's the one that we just went to, rather. Let's go to clip numbers 54. Clip 54. This was posted on TikTok or, you know, whatever social media. It's two black children in a subway car and white people are near them. Look what the person said as they published this video. Let's play it. Point of view, watching adults act completely paralyzed just because kids exist near them with different skin color. It's literally just two kids sitting in a stroller with white people standing nearby. What type of paranoid delusion do you have to be in to be looking at like a white guy just like standing there with a shopping bag scrolling his phone and just be like, he's paralyzed with fear because he hates black people? The hell are you talking about? Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, literally insane. Not just like, oh, they're kind of like extremist or whatever. No, they are actually insane. And then we go to things like 47. This video, again, published by a black dude. Let's watch. Celebrating it. Like, not shy. Let's watch 47 here. Point of view, just ruined a kid's Christmas. Grown, adult, black male. Hey, film me, bro, film me. I'm going to do this. Picks up a white kid, slams him on his tailbone. The kid starts wailing and, like, twitching, crying, because he probably just broke his tailbone. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? A fun time, Christmas Eve. As a black guy, go assault a white child and injure them. Meanwhile, you got this. Let's go to clip 46 really quick. 46. Go ahead and roll it. It's a black guy just, like, encroaching on white girls and being like, look how racist they are. So, you know, come to whatever conclusions you want, but we're being ruled by delusion.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It
fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the Sith and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now. And get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.